Marin. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings, part-time Buddhas, delusional, self-centered, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Of course, always welcome. People that really should either throw out or wash that stinky yoga mat. Good morning. Nice to have you. Of course,
you
welcome.
Didn't say yoga mat.
Yes, I did.
I just went to a yoga place. My daughter had a yoga party on Sunday.
Your daughter?
Who is seven? Yes.
Had a yoga party?
She had like 10 of her friends at a yoga place that's near where we live, and they actually went through the mechanics of yoga. Yeah.
Wow. That's almost a little creepy to me, but it's okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they left any stinky mats.
No. They know who I'm talking about. I always thought that yoga was for sort of like, you know, sad, seeking, you know, sort of, you know, 20 to 40 year olds who are like, I really need to do something that's going to center me. I being one of them, I'm not judging. The stinky yoga mat is essentially, there are people that show up at yoga classes with these like $15 mats that have like, you know, holes sort of, you know, in them from where their feet are, and there's stinky, like dirty feet stains on them from like, you know, 10 years of use. It's like, you know, spend a little money. Or, you know, wash the mat, get some vinegar or whatever it is that you need to wash the mat, or get a new mat.
What, you got foot fungus on it or something?
Riley, wow. I didn't know we were going to get hung up on this.
When you said stinky yoga mat, I said, whoa.
It was kind of something cute I was going to say in passing, and all of a sudden I'm like, I'm in the middle of, like, you know, what exactly I mean by a stinky yoga mat. I guess I'm just acting out of my own guilt to get back to yoga, because I used to do it out in L.A. Man, could we sound more, like, you know, and I bring in these, I don't even know what I want to say. Can we sound more wussy-ish? I mean, can I sound more like some sort of like everything that people think we are? Like, you know, I just didn't get to yoga and I'm feeling like, you know, what is that? I mean, I sat at home and just, you know, what did I do yesterday? I played guitar and watched that damn Led Zeppelin DVD.
Really? Again?
So my eyes bled.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man. You know, it's like there's so many things going on there where you just sort of, why can't I be that age and going to that concert now? I mean, there's some sort of nostalgia thing. Then there's just the pure rock thing. And then I pick up my guitar and I'm like, I'm going. I'm going to jam with Jimmy. And then I realize, like, wow, this is, I'm never going to be a rock and roll guitar player. I got to let that one go. Because there's still part of me that thinks in my head, like, you know, hey, if this radio thing doesn't work it out, I could always join a band at 41. Hey, fellas, I'm here. Let's rock. I wrote a new song. And, like, that's going to happen. And then I cooked some cookies because Mishna left, so I was, you know, freaking out. And God forbid I, you know, work on this article I got to write for In These Times, or possibly Prepare for Tough Crowd tonight. I'm like, no, I'm going to cook the fellas some cookies for tomorrow. And I found this. I can't believe I'm admitting this stuff. There's something shameful. I mean, I might as well be admitting I had some sort of, I don't know, you know, devious sexual experience. But no, I made black and white cookies at home, little ones that I got out of the Martha Stewart magazine.
And they're gorgeous, and they taste wonderful.
Thanks, Mark. But believe me, when I'm sitting there doing each side with, you know, I had two little bowls, one of the white icing, one of the black icing. And
they're going as we speak.
I put the black icing on one side, and then I'm like, okay, here comes the white icing. I don't want to mix them. I'm like, oh, my God, when did I become a wife? What am I? And I that's why I sat there. I was doing it. I'm like, I'm so gay. But I mean gay in the way that, you know, like I'm, you know, not gay, homosexual gay, but this is gay. You know, you know the difference? Am I being, is there a PC problem? Are the PC police going to, it's like the retarded issue, you know?
Oh, here we go.
Gay in the way, I'm not ashamed of being gay in the way that one makes cookies. You know, and plenty of
I don't think there's anything particularly gay about making cookies.
But you're not gay and, like, homosexual gay, but just sort of like, what am I doing sitting here like, ooh, I hope the icing doesn't. I mean, I guess what I'm saying, Riley, is that I didn't see myself at 41. You know, I'm a guy
making cookies at 41.
Let me tell you something, Riley. I've had sex in bathrooms. Yeah, I've done blow off the floor in Hollywood.
Please don't get me started.
I have thrown up after a 3-day run and lived.
My limit was 5.
Right.
I did five days consecutively without sleep.
You must have been seeing flying dwarves at 5 days, man. That's
no, it was like it was during a convention and there were parties every night. And yeah. I went to every party every night for 5 days, and then slept for two.
I think our the Smarty Pants Larson's actually been up for 3 days. Poor guy can't regulate his sleep properly because the hours we work, if you don't know out there, you know, we really have to figure out a way to, you know, get the sleep in and not and still have a life. So he tried a new sleep schedule.
Didn't work.
Poor guy didn't work for it. He's all punchy and raw. His eyes are all like, you know, they're all baggy. And I'm like, what's the matter, man? Did your dog die?
No, like, no, man. Sleep patterns. And I went to the doctor's yesterday for a physical and, you know, blood pressure medicine, and I got to take a baby aspirin. I mean, you know, it makes you feel like every pain is your last. You know, that whole, you'll know in another 10 years, you'll understand.
I think about death fairly frequently. I do. Sometimes I lay in bed, I got nothing better to do. You know what I mean? I'm just like, wow, what if I don't wake up? That'd be weird. You know? I used to obsess about it. I used to just obsess about, you know, like I always used to think, I thought I was completely hypochondriacal.
Really?
Is that the word? No, I was a complete hypochondria. I had hypochondria, devastating hypochondria, constantly thought I was dying of something. I was always digging my hands into my armpits, looking for lumps. I was always like, you know, feeling my glands. I was like compulsively just a hypochondriac to know it. And you know what? It went away. It's sort of a long story, but it went away.
Well, if I don't go to the doctor, I'm sure mine will go away.
I used to go to doctors all the time.
Really?
I used to. My dad was a doctor, so whenever I thought I was dying, I'd call him up and be like, dude, I'm dying. He's like, you're not dying. I'm like, you don't understand. I need to see a doctor. So he'd just call his friends up and say, can my kid come? He thinks he's dying. So all these doctors knew me as like Dr. Marin's like, kid is dying. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
wow.
And I'd always come in and they'd be like, there's nothing wrong with him. I'd be like, are you sure, man? What do you know? What does that diploma on the wall really mean? I'm dying. Aren't we all dying? You know. And then I realized it was just me reaching out to my dad. I was like, Dad, come on, love me.
Well,
bastard.
I had to draw blood yesterday, you know, and I, one good thing, I never became a junkie because I've always hated needles.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guy comes out with one of those horse-looking
needles.
I'm
glad you had a reason.
Yeah.
Otherwise, boy, I could...
Otherwise, there'd be tracks in my neck.
Yeah,
that's the way it would boil down. But, I mean...
Oh, your wife's going to kill you.
Yeah, I know. But you go and you sit and you wait, and the guy comes out with this needle, and he's got three vials.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking he's going to stick me three different times to get the blood necessary.
Oh, yeah, right.
But he just took like one.
Yeah, they reload it. But they're watching, like, next cartridge, they punch it in
punch
there.
Punch it in,
up all different styles. Of, you know, speaking of needles, man, we had a situation yesterday. That feels like a tease, doesn't it?
Yeah, right.
Speaking of needles, man, I don't even want to get into this right now. But we... No, the woman came over before Mishna went on her plane. The woman, Raquel, who's the cat rescue woman.
Oh, yes.
Okay, first of all, I want to say that I succeeded, man. I got that mother fixed. The mother of the stray cats that I took in is fixed and back in the backyard, and I'm feeding her. And so I have curbed that feral colony. It's not going to go on. I feel like I actually helped out and did something. Now, my four cats, one of them has become quite warm and will let me pick it up and pet it and everything else. Tremendous progress.
That's the orange?
That's the male, yeah. The other three women, or the bitches, as I call them, are just a disaster. They're like, and yesterday she comes over to give the cats their shot. She knows how to do that. She had the stuff, right? And man, it was like a little kiddie shooting gallery in my office yesterday. It was devastating. I had to hold these cats down. And this is a woman that deals with like feral cats all the time. And two of these cats, these girl cats, doesn't matter. I'm not going to be sexist about it. Two of these cats, when I got hold of them, they were so freaked out. They were screaming and going to the bathroom. It was a nasty thing just to hold these cats down. And they were so... pissed. And this woman who's like, I've never seen a cat this wild. How did I get the cats that the woman who does, you know, rescues cats for a living says, these cats are crazy. And I'm like, I didn't do it. They were like that. I've been doing nothing but helping them. They're like, these are wild animals. Now I got hit. They bit me. Anyways.
Ooh.
So we got them all shot up and we gave them the deworm stuff. And then they all sort of pass out. And then I started to think, like, what if that woman's not really a cat rescuer? What if she's this sick person that just goes around killing cats?
No.
You know, it turns out.
No, be not. Optimistic. She was cool.
Oh, yeah, everything was good.
The cats are still okay, right? I mean, they're
all good. I'd like somebody to volunteer to take two of these female kittens that are, you know, I think they'll be good pets as long as you don't touch them.
Just feed them, do not touch them.
So, speaking of people being released from bondage,
Yasser Hamdi.
How's that for a segue? Let's Yasser Hamdi is on his way after some hurricane problems. He's been put on a plane, but it's okay. Apparently, they put him through security, and we'll be back in a second to talk about 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
This week at MotherJones.com, crossing the lines. The battle for Iraq is over oil, right? Wrong. It's over bandwidth. Cell phone bandwidth. That's why a top Pentagon official and some big-name Republicans tried to give an American-led consortium a key stake in Iraq's lucrative wireless market. Find out how at MotherJones.com. Every week on MotherJones.com, you'll find exclusive reports and timely pointers to the best of the independent web. Log on now to MotherJones.com because you need independent news.
Crimes Against Nature, a new book by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., sets the record straight on George W. Bush, corporate greed, and the plunder of America. Crimes Against Nature makes the case that the administration has taken corporate cronyism to unprecedented heights, threatening our health, our national security, and our democracy. Al Franken calls Crimes Against Nature a passionate and devastatingly written attack on the Bush administration. Crimes Against Nature, the national bestseller by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a HarperCollins book, now available at bookstores and online at airamericaradio.com.
Sirius. G'day, Bruce here for Sirius Discovery Radio. Now, there's some great guy stuff on Discovery, like American Chopper, Animal Planet, and my favorite, Shark Week. Sure beats the shrimp on the barbie, but the Shields out there wanted a little TLC. So from the Learning Channel, we've added Wedding Story, I Lost It, about weight loss, Adoption Stories, and Second Chance, a great show about finding a long-lost love. So check out the new, softer side of Sirius Discovery Channel Radio 135, coming to you October 4th. Good on you, mate.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Hi, everybody. This is Toby calling from Central California, and I'm voting for John Kerry on November 2nd. It's not necessarily a vote for John Kerry, but it's a vote against George W. Bush. This is the most important election of our lifetime, and we cannot allow this to just pass by. We have to go out and vote on November 2nd. Remember, especially all you people under 30.
Hi, this is Bob from Virginia. I'm voting for President Bush because I know he's working hard to bring about the revelation and to bring about the rapture, and I can't wait. Please vote for President Bush.
Hi, this is Carol calling from Nashville, Tennessee, and this election year I am voting for John Kerry. I am ready for my country to have a strong, intelligent, honest leader who will make sure that our troops come home.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius.
Hello, this is Rod Stewart for RAD, Recording Artists Against Drunk Driving. Your lifestyle is your business, but when you drive drunk, you become everybody's business. Don't drink and drive. Be smart, plan ahead, and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Past the hour, it's morning's edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio. I got an email from a guy who I used to call the Buddha. He was one that did my lighting for my one-man show off Broadway, and he was yelling at me. He's not really yelling at me. He's a big fan, but he got into this thing where he's like, you know, the debates are rigged. There's no difference between John Kerry and George Bush. They're both corporate-funded. You know, presidential candidate. There's this whole argument, like, they're the same, man. They're not.
No.
They're not the same. It's like, I understand the progressive agenda. I understand the points of contention with corporate oligarchy and whatnot. But look, dude, if we don't get rid of Bush, we're in real trouble. If we don't get rid of the smug, belligerent, arrogant, faux Christian, AWOL, ex-blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult. We're in
nice
trouble.
Work.
We're in trouble. And I just want to say, look, I understand we can get to work on that stuff, and we will get to work on that stuff, but we've got to get Bush out of office, and Kerry's our guy, so get on board.
Later this morning, by the way, we're going to be talking with someone who's an expert on what Bush is going to do if he wins a second term in terms of the nation's tax structure. And it is truly, truly scary.
Don't tell me he's going to help the rich make more money.
Yeah, that's part of it.
But I wonder, I'm not going to do it a sloppy segue. I'm not even going to try to be clever. Apparently, Hamdi is booked to leave on Sunday. And this is a tremendous defeat for the president in a couple of ways. He detained a guy for, what, almost 2 years?
2 years. Yasser Hamdi, enemy combatant.
Yeah, I think in another article it said soft terrorist.
Yeah.
Like he was
terror light.
Yeah, terror light. He was a guy that was sort of like, he was there with a gun but wasn't quite pinnable. But so they held a guy that apparently didn't prove to be, it is a victory for constitutional law though. But they did detain him, and now they're sending him back to Saudi Arabia. So either, if they're right, then nothing will happen. But they're sending him back under the condition that Hamdi agrees not to aid, assist, or in any way affiliate with the Taliban or any member of Al-Qaeda or any other terrorist organization or terrorist so designated by the United States. So I don't know. We'll find out, you know.
Well, that's not all. I mean, he's under what our friends in the Caribbean call heavy manners. That's how they worked out this agreement. He's required to tell the Saudi and U.S. embassy officials if he is solicited to engage in any combatant activities. He has to renounce his U.S. citizenship, renounce terrorism and violent jihad. He also has to remain inside Saudi Arabia for 5 years, not travel to the United States for 10 years, and never travel to Afghanistan, Iraq, Israel, Pakistan, Syria, the West Bank, or the Gaza Strip.
So they did everything but put a LoJack device on him.
Yeah. I mean, why not just, you know, wire that thing to his ankle or something?
So those are the stipulations. Don't go anywhere where you might. It's almost like a drug addict. It's like, you know, you don't want him to go anywhere where there might be a whiff of terrorism around, because he might just sort of go, I'm coming with the gun again.
Slowly I turn. Yeah. I mean, that seems to be what they're afraid of. See, what I find interesting is that the United States, I believe, called this guy's bluff about what he had to do in order to get out of, because, you know, he's been in solitary for a good deal of his time in Charleston, South Carolina, in a military brig. Now, you know, you do enough time and then you'll do anything to get out.
Yeah,
right? It's not fun time to do. And I'm thinking, you know, he had the law on his side. The United States government essentially had nothing. The Bush administration had nothing.
Right.
And yet they still managed to get him to renounce his citizenship, promise he'd never travel to all these different countries. I think they called his bluff.
I guess. Or maybe he just wanted to say whatever they needed to, he needed to
whatever,
say.
Whatever, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, just put me on the plane, right?
I just see light, please? I just would like to see light.
Well, you know, Mark, one of the parts of the story that I find really, really fascinating is that they say that he was, first of all, he was supposed to be released no later than Thursday, and it said he would be transported in civilian clothes and unhooded. Does that mean that they, you know, under certain circumstances, would have put a bag over his head to get him out of there? I don't understand what that means.
Well, I guess they've been transporting a lot of them because you see pictures of them with handcuffs.
Yeah, with handcuffs and hoods over their
heads. And hoods over their heads. So they don't, I guess that was one of the stipulations. It's like, you know, I've been in solitary, no hoods.
I'd like to see something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he's going to be on the airplane. He's not going to have cuffs on or anything.
No.
He's a free guy.
He is technically a free man.
So they're banking on, you know, later in the show, if you're going to hang out for all 3 hours, which we hope you do, why not?
Yes, please do.
And also, if you do hang out for all 3 hours, you might, it's good, it's good. I know there are
don't
a lot of
people. Don't start that, okay? I know what you're getting ready to say.
No, but it's early. I guess, like, you know, people, it's nice if people get up early to listen to us, because I'm up here early, and we're here for all 3 hours.
Yeah.
I couldn't rightly leave and just leave you hanging out. I mean, I could. But
you could. I could leave you and leave you hanging out.
Yeah, but
that would be wrong.
It would. Then it wouldn't be a show. It would be like, it would be, where's Mark? Paul Thompson's going to come in, and we're going to talk about Hamdi, and we're also going to talk about the Pakistani Intelligence Service, the ISI, because I'd like to know where Hamdi comes from and get a little more research from his book, Terror Timeline, which is
a brilliant book. I mean, an absolute, you know, if you were going to ascribe a work of art to essentially a documentary book, this would be it.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that on all levels that this is, if Hamdi does show up as a terrorist again, or if he does get involved again, if he goes right back into the fray of things, then I don't know what that means. What are the implications of that? That Bush was wrong, that the administration was wrong, that the legal system was wrong. I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Well, you figure he's going back to Saudi Arabia. Bush is supposed to be close friends with Prince Bandar and the Saudi royal family.
Right.
Why can't he give him a heads up and say, look, keep an eye on this guy. Make sure he doesn't, act up, all right?
Because Bandar's like, we got enough problems over here. Why? We can't watch all of these guys.
Yeah, right.
What do you want? Do you want us to drop the oil prices or do you want us to watch this guy?
Yeah. We can't do both.
Why did you send him back to Louisiana? Didn't he grow up there? This is, you know what I mean? What do we got to babysit your problems for?
Right. By the way, Mark, there's a story about this whole thing that Cheney started by saying that a vote for Kerry would really, invite another terrorist attack.
Right.
Trying to follow, the whole Madrid logic.
Right.
Well, there are terror experts, four senior terror experts, that say that the threat to attack the United States prior to the presidential election isn't about affecting the outcome in favor of John Kerry. It's really trying to, I don't want to trivialize this.
Look at me, I'm blowing things up, look at this.
Yeah, it's really about reestablishing the terrorist street cred.
Yes.
I mean, which is an incredibly terrible thing to do or to have as an aspiration. But this whole idea that a vote for John Kerry is a vote for terrorism, which Dick Cheney has actively promoted on more than one occasion.
And Tom Ridge a little bit, too,
yeah.
Even before the Republican National Convention, was insinuating that the president is a target.
Yeah, yeah.
And really, as it turns out, just the idea of the election process is a target. The idea of disrupting a process that the entire nation has its eyes on in order to just show, we're still capable of this. This is what we can do when it's, the most sacred or supposedly the most important process of our country.
Yeah, that's what they're looking at. Now, these officials, by the way, say that the FBI has interviewed 13,000 people considered possible sources of information about a plot on the part of Al-Qaeda prior to the U.S. election.
And as a lot of people are saying, even Ted Kennedy came out and said, and we've been saying on this show, really, that this president, President Bush, has done more for bringing terrorism together and escalating terrorism and helping them mobilize than anyone else. I mean, if they wanted to have a president that would help their cause, it would certainly
be
this president. He just gave them a new homeland, almost.
Yeah,
in Iraq.
But, Mark, I think not everyone bought that when you first started saying it, two, 3 months ago?
It was.
But now the entire country is buying this idea.
Well, I mean, there's no way to deny that. Once it became undeniable that the unilateral decision to go into Iraq disrupted the place so much that it left so much chaos there that insurgents were coming from around the world to be part of it, and now there's a multifaceted insurgency. I mean, it's been pretty obvious for a few months.
Yeah.
I wish I was the first to say it, but I think Peter Bergen and some of the journalists who are on the ground, Borzu and also Mick Ware, speculating along those lines.
But you're the first in broadcast.
Yes, sir.
There you go. Coming up, the president's palm pilot, the liberal agenda, and the candidates prepare for the first big debate when we come back here on Air America Radio.
I think the biggest threat to the environment is the idea that now, and when I mean now, this moment in time is all there is.
That's singer, songwriter, and activist Michael Franti from the band Spearhead.
The caretakers of this continent before Europeans came here had a very clear vision. They said, we are here to take care of this land for the seven generations of people before us.
Are we part of the solution? Or are we part of the pollution?
And I think there has to be an accountability and a mindset that every person in this planet has, that each of us is responsible for what we produce and what we put out into the world.
Franti says there has to be a shift in our thinking.
And that shift has to be that we have to think about the seven generations to come.
That's Michael Franti on Planet Check.
Planet Check. Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. President Bush told television's Bill O'Reilly last night that he was confident there would be an election in Iraq. Moreover, Bush felt it was expedient for Iraqis to trek to the polls while bombs were dropping around them to vote for a new government. A report commissioned by the Bush administration is suggesting the U.S. ambassador spent at least a quarter of their time explaining U.S. foreign policy to local audiences. Today's report is expected to say that ambassadors don't spend enough time promoting American values and culture. 5 weeks before the election, a federal appeals court brought back to life a lawsuit demanding that all Florida voters who use touchscreen machines receive a paper receipt in case a recount becomes necessary. And the Bush administration yesterday decided to back away from a proposal that critics said would force many of the 2 million poor elderly or disabled families who use government housing vouchers to foot more of their rent on their own. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
From New Orleans.
Touchdown! And the Saints have retaken the lead.
To Oakland.
Touchdown! Raiders!
And from Florida.
He made the grab! Touchdown, Jacksonville!
To Washington.
35 touchdown, Washington Redskins.
Every game, every week, everywhere. Go to Sirius.com for the full game schedule and for live 24/7 football. Tune in to Sirius NFL Radio 124.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Richard wants to borrow money to buy a rental property. I'll give him my 2 cents worth after this.
Federal college loan rates are now at their lowest levels in history. So if you currently have high-interest student loans, it's time to refinance. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. With one call, you could be on your way to saving thousands. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE.
Borrow to invest? Richard wants to know if I would recommend that for a rental property.
We have our house paid for. We have 3 cars paid for, 2 rent houses paid for. Want to get another rental home, but I don't have as much, you know, cash for a down payment. What kind of an idea would be to borrow, I know you hate that word, against our house or one of our other 2 rental properties to get a 3rd rental property?
I would tell you I'm going to recommend against that because I personally don't borrow money, number one. Borrowing to invest is increases the risk of the investment tenfold.
Right.
And, your world right now is very calm. As soon as you enter the world of payments, you lose an element of that control. I'm an advocate of building wealth in such a way that you get to keep it. And the interesting thing is when you save and pay cash for a property, you tend to pay less for it.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Yes, 33 past the hour. Coming around. Just had some smelling salts. You always wonder what those were. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio on Morning's Edition. You know, in all those movies where the guy, like, gets unconscious and they just wave that stuff under the nose and go, hey, what happened?
Yep.
You ever smell those things?
I think they were called poppers back
in the day. No, that was different. That would have... Yeah, baby! Disco balls, little amyl nitrate. Let's go!
Hey. I don't know anything about the...
These poppers, they're sex drugs. There's nothing like, you know, increasing the potency and excitement of sex with that feeling that your heart might explode in the middle of it.
Yeah, I know. It's called living on the edge.
Boy, we're doing it. Back in the day.
Well, I used to read about these things in some of those popular magazines of the time.
Yeah. I'm reading about it in a book that you gave me about you.
Oh, sorry. Oh, God. No, that's my friend Tim Lawrence's book. I've just quoted it a couple of times.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, listen, you're backpedaling now. Hold on. I've got a comedy bit to do here because Ramon just ran in, dropped this off, and ran out, and he's wearing nothing but leather chaps. That guy's gone nuts. I don't know what's happening with Ramon, but I got a feeling that whatever it is, he's not sleeping much, and it only happens in the middle of the night. But he somehow still gets us the presidential palm pilot. Here's the president's schedule for today. 6:30 a.m., wake up in Crawford. Stay on message. Thank God I don't have to go to Ohio today. 10 a.m. Stand in front of mirror practicing debate zingers. Remain presidential while mirror insults you. 11 a.m. Play John Kerry debate dummy at Monopoly. Be firm this time. I'm the race car. He's the iron. 12 noon, talk to Bruce Belanch about debate zingers. Explore the Kerry's got a long face angle. 1 p.m., call in to Bill O'Reilly's show and say, yeah, this is George. I mean, Jim from Crawford. After seeing your brilliant interview with George W. Bush, why do we even have to have debates? Game's over as far as I'm concerned. 2 p.m., play John Kerry debate dummy at Lawn Dart. Tell him yesterday's win was a fluke. 4 p.m., call Jeb in Florida, ask, wet enough for you? 10 p.m. He probably did that. 10 p.m. bedtime. Bring debate dummy to bed. Smother it with a pillow. There you go. There you go. So they're going at it. The debates. I don't know if a lot of people realize that there are very the rules. You know the rules for the debates?
No, tell me about
the
rules.
These were navigated, negotiated by Jim Satan Baker III.
And Vernon Jordan.
Who is one of the great old Satans of the Republican Party. Anytime they pull Baker out of wherever he lives, out of the dungeon, out of the coffin, out of the strange dark cave that he lives in, Baker, bring Baker and he'll fix it. You know something bad and demonic is going on.
There's an election to be rigged. Won.
Yeah, that. Any number of things. Here are the rules. 90 minutes per debate. At least 16 questions in each debate. 2 minutes for responses. No camera shots of candidates reacting to each other. Candidates cannot approach each other. No direct questions to each other. No height-adding devices. Right? No TV camera shots from behind. No touching. No touching from behind. No crotch stuffing. No overt displays of education. Candidate must limit words to 4 syllables or less. No notes, charts, or other writings. No finger puppets, you know, after the Nixon thing. No props, no smoke machines or laser effects, which is going to hurt Bush a little bit because he was wanting it. Candidates cannot arrive on stage to the music from 2001. Each candidate will use his own makeup artist. Candidates may not wear KISS makeup. Now, these are all obviously not real. But you'd be surprised the one that each candidate will use his own makeup artist is real.
Is real, yeah. There are a couple other ones in there that were real as well. That the height-adding devices is real, isn't it?
Yes, it is real. That's a real one because apparently it has been... all these things are based on statistics or on things that they've learned from previous debates, that the taller candidate usually wins.
Yeah.
That it gives an advantage. But the whole idea that no direct questions, that's a very frightening thing, that they cannot actually question each other. They cannot, in a sense... react to each other intimately in a back and forth. They can only present themselves, and the other presents a reaction. So it's going to have to take some clever structuring of questions to put each other on the defensive. Hopefully, I believe Kerry's going to. He's supposedly a very good debater.
Well, see, what troubles me about this whole debate sequence is that they've really the people who would normally sponsor debates, the media, whoever, has really kind of given over the tone and conduct of the debate to the candidates. Which I think is a long-term dangerous thing. Why shouldn't these candidates be able to ask each other questions? Approaching each other, that's just a stylistic thing. But to be able to ask each other questions, that's a staple of debating. So
yeah.
Why is there a problem with this taking place in this particular debate? The other thing, Mark, that's important that people need to know about these debates is that most people watch the first one.
Yeah.
The second and third, if you look at the television ratings over the last couple of election cycles, it declines after the first debate. I forgot the exact percentage, but each debate has fewer people watching. So by the third, it's not nearly as many as the first.
Well, maybe we could take Zell Miller's advice, and maybe instead of we should do it differently this year and actually work towards a duel.
Duel.
the first debate is the most watched, but hey, but wait, it's a fight to the death is the third one. I wish we could talk to a debate expert. Hopefully that's going to happen. Hey, if you're a debate expert out there, like you're like a wizard or some kind of guy who really understands debates, you should call us and just tell us, you know, how this isn't a real debate. That's 866-303-2270.
Yeah, but don't front, all right? Be an expert. Don't play.
Yeah, yeah. We're not really. Well, you know, just go ahead and call us if you have any information, because it seems to me that this debate is fixed in the way that it doesn't provide real engagement.
Yeah. So as they prepare, Mark, they're going back and forth on their favorite subject this week. Iraq.
Yes.
Now, Bush goes on the my cousin Bill O'Reilly's TV show.
Yes.
and gets into a whole thing about Iraq voting. Now, you heard Rumsfeld, I guess it was, the end of last week, saying essentially, well, if there's certain areas where people can't vote, that's okay. As long as we get about 80% right, that's not a problem.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
the way democracy
we
works.
We have that here. We actually try to keep people from voting.
Yeah, we'll get to that later, as a matter of fact. But now, listen to what Bush says in an answer to a question by Bill O'Reilly about Iraq voting.
I think when it's all said and done, the Iraqis are going to look back and say, thank God for America.
How long is it going to take before that happens, do you think?
You know, it's as soon as possible. Now, I think the elections are going to have a very positive effect, and they take place in January. And what the people want to vote.
But can they vote when people are being blown up and these guys are threatening them? Can they vote?
That's when you're supposed to vote.
See, I think
it's what you're supposed to vote.
I think that's some sort of cryptic warning about our own elections. I think that there's it's loaded somehow.
There what? Hurricanes,
terrorism. I think he already knows something's going to happen. He's going to say, this is the time to step in and vote and make sure you vote for me because I'm going to stay. It gives me the creeps. We're going to talk about more election shenanigans after this, right? On Air America Radio.
May 2004. Friends is the number one show on TV. But masks are in the pennant race. And we're just about to find those pesky weapons of mass destruction.
On a massive scale.
Then, 11:15 one night on Raw Dog Sirius 147.
Hey, it's Phil inviting you to join me for Getting Late's 100th episode spectacular. Adam Sandler, Jamie Foxx, George Lopez.
The All right. Getting Late 100th episode spectacular. Friday night at 11:15 on Raw Dog Sirius 147.
On Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Hi, this is Beth from Farmersville, New York, and I'd like to say rock the vote. It's our responsibility as young Americans to let our voices be heard, and if we rally and unite, we can elect a president that's going to get us out of debt, take care of our senior citizens, and protect our servicemen and women.
Hi, this is Eric from San Francisco. Everyone loves to bitch and moan, and everyone has an opinion, but no one seems to want to do anything about it. This is your chance to get out and show what you want this country to become. Make sure to go out and vote this year. It's the most important election we'll ever be involved in.
Hey, y'all, what's up? It's Samantha from West Virginia. I was just calling everybody to tell you, on November 2nd, 2004, get out there and vote.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius.
Hi, this is Steve Earle. There was a time when I believed that getting high enhanced my creativity. After all, I wrote some pretty good songs back then, in between finding drugs and taking drugs and finding means to get more. Then 9 years ago, I got clean. Since then, I've written 150 songs, 400 poems, 11 short stories, a play, a dozen articles and essays, and I'm working on a novel. So much for that theory.
This has been a message from MAP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA. TV personality Luke Perry.
All right, I got a little pop quiz for you. It's about me. What was my zip code? What city was it in? Name three kids I hung out with in the lunchroom. Name three kids your child hangs out with in the lunchroom.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4-PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Drop off the kids, run by the bank, pick up dinner, save the air. It's amazing what a mom can accomplish in an afternoon. It's called trip chaining, or combining errands into one trip. It saves time and reduces traffic congestion and pollution, making our towns a better place to live. So keep it up, because it all adds up to cleaner air. Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the EPA.
And you will atone.
That's it. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning's Edition, Air America Radio.
Hey.
Ow! Broadcasting from New York City, the capital of the liberal elite. I don't know if you're going to be watching me
on the Sundance Channel tonight. It's Al Franken's Dead Air. Catherine, could you, I'm about to get mean. All right, dude, don't get me wrong. All right, go ahead, get me wrong. What do I care?
Yeah.
Do whatever you got to do. Yeah, put it however you want. But just remember. All right, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. If you want to take some liberal lead, it's up to you. Again, thanks for the email. It's like, I don't think we need to be shooting people or hearing people out being shot. That's not what we need to be doing. I don't. How can that not be good?
He took a long time to drop that one. He did one of those movie-style twists and turns, I can tell.
He didn't quite know. Did you see Lee Van Cleef die in The Pale Rider?
No. I've seen him die in a couple other movies, though.
The Pale Rider was great. At the end, he shoots him. He shoots them all up, you know, with those exploding caps, and they blow out the back, and, you know, blood goops out of the back. And then he drops down to his knees, and Clint puts one right between his eyes. And there's that moment where his eyes cross. You know, did that really happen with people? He just looks up at the hole in his head, like the last thing you would do is try to see the hole that was just blown between your eyes and then drop down.
I think Captain McCluskey in The Godfather have a similar look when Michael Corleone shot him in
yeah. Sterling Hayden, you know,
yeah.
Through a mist of post-junk haze, you know, just sort of like, you know, just like swams into the
table, yeah.
I almost rented Goodfellas now that I got this DVD player. Because I think, like, I don't know, I think Randy talks about this too, but I think all the answers to most problems are either in the first two Godfathers or in Goodfellas, really. I think that, you know, you can address almost any issues of power within their politics. It's all in there. But
let's talk about power.
But I don't know if it applies to the election, actually. But actually it does. The fix is in. Or they're trying to put it in. This guy Blackwell, Secretary of State, J. Kenneth Blackwell.
He's the Secretary of State of Ohio. He is a very, very prominent black Republican in the state of Ohio.
And what do you think of that, Mark Riley? Let's be honest. Yeah, okay. This is a guy, take your time. You know,
God bless him, he toms from the heart. What are you going to do? You know, here's a guy.
He means it. Yeah. He's not just pretending.
He's not playing. Well, I mean, look, the guy has been a part of the Ohio political establishment for a good long time now.
Mm-hmm.
He is generally perceived as a kind of moderate black Republican. Not a doctrinaire conservative kind of guy.
Right.
Has been a part of the Ohio Republican Party apparatus for a number of years. But now he's gone and told local county boards of election that they have to follow, strictly this is, two provisions in Ohio's election law. The first one makes no sense whatsoever. Ohio voter registration cards have to be printed on thick 80-pound stock paper. Not 70, not 60, 80-pound stock.
It's crazy. And it says here anything that is, because what this does is that most of these state voter registration, you can do online.
Yes.
Which means that you can print it up yourself and mail it in. So if you print it up on a paper that isn't the
80 pounds,
the legislated paper.
Do over!
What it says, any Ohio form not printed, and this is directly from the, is it called a provision? What is this? It's a directive.
Yeah.
Any Ohio form not printed on this minimum paperweight is considered to be an application for a registration form. So what they will do is instead of you being registered, then once you send this in, is they will receive it and then send you a registration form on the right, you know, issue of paper, and you will fill it out again. So depending on when people get their voter registration, and as most people like myself, probably doing it the last minute, probably just trying to get it in, this could push them over the edge to where they're not registered, and they may think they are registered.
Well, the deadline for registration in the state of Ohio is October 4th, which, if memory serves, could be ka-ching next week.
It's a few days away.
Yeah. So, I mean, now you've got the U.S. mails involved in seeing to it that people actually are able to exercise their franchise. Now, the second directive.
Let's hold it. Let's do it. Let's do it after the break.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be right back with this second, it's in Florida, right?
Yeah.
Okay, of course, Florida. Air America Radio, we'll talk to you in a second.
There is a terrible affliction plaguing Americans. It's our number one emotional problem, the failure of relationships, dating, and marriage. At Theradate.com, we are a group of licensed and certified mental health professionals who have decided to do something about it. A revolutionary matching and compatibility system originally only for use by therapists is now available to the general public. Theradate.com is not a casual dating site. It does not use personality profiles or other pop psychology gimmicks. It is a matching system utilizing over 80 years of psychological research. We ask questions the way therapists do to get to know their patients. We ask the questions that truly determine who is the best match for you. Theradate.com is now accepting free registration for a limited time. Log on to www.theradate.com to try Theradate's unique matching system for free. If you are tired of being alone and truly want to bond with someone for life, log on to www.theradate.com. That's www.theradate.com. For a limited time, it's free to join our totally unique service.
May 2004. Friends is the number one show on TV. The Mets are in the pennant race. And we're just about to find those pesky weapons of mass destruction.
On a massive scale.
Then, 11:15 one night on Raw Dog Sirius 147.
Hey, it's Phil inviting you to join me for Getting Late's 100th episode spectacular. Adam Sandler, Jamie Foxx, George Lopez.
The All right. Getting Late 100th episode spectacular. Friday night at 11:15 on Raw Dog Sirius 147.
Optimist volunteers serve as leaders, mentors, and friends to help kids achieve a more positive and productive life in 3,600 communities and 19 countries. This year, Optimists will raise and invest over $80 million in 60,000 community service projects that help 6 million children and teens. Optimists have been bringing out the best in kids for nearly 100 years. For the location of your nearest Optimist Club, call 1-800-500-8130.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Close your eyes and imagine you're on an unspoiled beach. Sunlight streaming through the palm leaves. A paradise like this isn't easy to come by, but it does still exist because the Nature Conservancy works locally to save precious places around the world forever. That way, closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. Help save the last great places. Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org.
There we go. Mark Maron here, Morning's Edition. Mark Riley there.
Hi.
Air America Radio. So what's the second part of this Ohio directive or provision or whatever you call it, whatever it is, the thing they're using to try to obfuscate or put an obstacle in the path of, not obfuscate, that's not the right word, to put an obstacle in the path of the people registering to vote.
Okay, this is Ohio Secretary of State J. Kenneth Blackwell. He has issued two recent decisions. One is the 80-pound stock paper that voter registration cards must be printed on. A lot of people are freaked out about that.
Very heavy.
And the other one orders boards to strictly interpret rules regarding provisional ballots. These are ballots that are cast by people who may have moved, because most people, you know, don't necessarily plan their moves around elections.
Yeah.
So there are people who may have moved but still are registered in the state of Ohio.
Sure, that happens all the time. I mean, very few people update their information or renew their driver's license appropriately.
Yeah. Now, this directive forbids poll workers from giving a provisional ballot unless the person can prove they live in the precinct. A spokeswoman for the League of Women Voters says that federal law is less restrictive than that.
So these guys are pulling any sort of loopholes or any sort of, you know, old laws or anything they can to put an obstacle in the way of people who are registering to vote or probably registering to vote Democrat.
Well, you could interpret it that way, yeah. I mean, the 80-pound stock paper thing is just absurd on its face. I mean, most of this was done back in the day when, you know, these records were kept for years and years. Now, most counties in Ohio scan this stuff onto computers. So there's no need to keep this hard stock paper anymore. So why suddenly start, interpreting the letter of the law here? It's very strange.
Yeah, it also seems to make it more difficult, because things should be so much easier now. Certainly registering for anything or moving information from place to place with the computer and with, being able to download whatever you need and print it at home. I've done that. I did it with the Los Angeles registration to get my absentee ballot. I went right to the site. I downloaded the proper forms. I filled them out and I mailed them out. But like I was saying before, theoretically, you could do that and send them in on the printer paper that you bought, and they could say, as it says in this directive, if you do that, it won't be counted because of this arcane law that makes no difference anymore.
Yeah, not heavy enough paper. Now, in Florida, there's been a victory for people like you, Mark, who want to see a paper trail on these electronic touch screens.
I like when people like me have victories in their life.
The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has told a federal judge in Fort Lauderdale to reopen a lawsuit that demands all Florida voters who use these touchscreen machines get a paper receipt, just in case of a recount. Now, it's not clear whether this case can be decided before the election, but this panel in Atlanta said that the judge in the case misapplied a legal doctrine when he threw out the lawsuit that was actually filed by Democratic Congressman Robert Wexler.
It just amazes me after we talked to Bev Harris, the idea that there are these Diebold or Diebold machines or any of these electronic voting machines without paper trails in Florida. I mean, there's no reason to trust these bastards. There just is no indication that they're trustable. They fight dirty. They'll do whatever is necessary. And the capacity for anyone with a mild or minor or small amount of computer proficiency can hack into the main brain of these voting machines and change the number and the count is so, it's so disturbing. I can't imagine why anybody would listen to me. I can't. Mark, say something clear. let me focus here. What I'm saying is it's a crime that there's no paper trail, and for them to be resisting it, it makes it very clear to me that they want to make it difficult. They want to fix it. They want to make it so it's not easy to determine who won.
I want to find out exactly how much damage has been done to any of the voting apparatus due to these hurricanes. I mean, is anybody asking themselves whether any of this stuff is going to work properly? Because maybe a voting machine that started out in Dade County is now all the way up in Jacksonville? I mean, what's going on here?
And where do they keep those voting machines? They're strange sort of archaic-looking things with the curtain, and a lot of them look very sort of 1960s, 1970s, but I think some of them are updated. I don't know where they keep them during the year.
Yeah, well, these new ones, because of the punch cards and the hanging chads from 4 years ago, a lot of these touchscreen machines are new. They're brand-new machines. But the problem is, without a paper trail, how are you going to keep a record when you have the possibility of power surges and any kind of, weather-related problems?
Well, apparently the weather hasn't stopped us from getting our liberal agenda. Man, on this break, I got to juice up. I got to get some coffee.
There you go.
Blow out my brain here. Write these down. Here's the agenda for today. Tell everyone you meet today. Wasn't Kerry great in the debate? A total knockout. 2, strategy meeting. Since Conan O'Brien takes over for Leno in 2009, can he help us elect Obama in 2012? 3, write column for Le Monde called Le Snot American. 4, don't just talk about moving to Amsterdam if Bush is reelected. Get the necessary forms and start doing some web research today. 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Of course Bush is ahead in the polls. It's all going exactly how we planned it.
There you go.
What do we got coming up?
In the next hour of morning's edition, Mark Maron's Dream Diary. Terror Timeline author Paul Thompson, Iraq, Birth of a Nation, You on the Telephones, and the Liberal Confessional. When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Hey, you guys, remember, there are two kinds of Americans, voters and morons. Register to vote through our link at morningsedition.com.
Here's an important food safety rule to keep in mind. It takes thorough cooking to kill harmful bacteria. Check your food for doneness, especially meat and poultry, with a food thermometer, because food safety is important. Don't take chances. Cooking food thoroughly is a simple way to keep you and your family healthy. Brought to you by the Partnership for Food Safety Education.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad.
Where do you go?
When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Where do you go?
Hearing a great deal about frequency modulation. The new high fidelity.
The new way.
Superior sound resolution with S-Plex technology. Sirius, it's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The Iraqi Health Ministry has confirmed it, but the speculation about the phenomenon has been far-reaching for months. That is, American multinational and Iraqi police are killing far more innocent Iraqi civilians than they are insurgents as their attacks increase. Information was recently uncovered in an exclusive report by Knight Ritter. Iraqi officials say two-thirds of the Iraqi deaths were caused by the U.S. side and police. The remaining third was by the insurgents. While it appears that most of the victims have been civilians, the report reveals an untold number of police and Iraqi National Guardsmen. Many of the Iraqi deaths were never reported. They were all killed. In another development, there were reports that members of an Oregon Army National Guard in Iraq are expressing concerns about whether they can trust members of the Iraqi police force. This after the guardsmen found a large assortment of explosives, weapons, and other material typically used by the insurgents near their barracks. While the material has since been confiscated by the American soldiers, speculation still abounds about its discovery in the hands of Iraqi police. President Bush expressed confidence last night in a televised interview with broadcaster Bill O'Reilly that there will be an election in Iraq. Bush went on to say that he thought it would be expedient for all Iraqi nationals to go out and vote while bombs were dropping around them to elect a new government.
I think when it's all said and done, the Iraqis are going to look back and say, thank God for America.
How long is it going to take before that happens, do you think?
You know, it's as soon as possible. Now, I think the elections are going to have a very positive effect, and they take place in January. But the people want to vote.
But can they vote when people are being blown up and these guys are threatening them? Can they vote?
That's when you're supposed to vote.
President Bush on Fox Television last night. In other news, a report commissioned by the Bush administration will suggest the U.S. ambassador spend at least a quarter of their time explaining U.S. foreign policy to local audiences. Today's report is expected to say that ambassadors don't spend enough time promoting American values and culture. It also finds that many foreign service officers lack language skills. The report criticizes ambassadors for being fearful of making errors or projecting a view inconsistent with State Department policy. Additionally, the report suggests officials should adjust their terminology. It says officials often use terrorist words that terrorists prefer, that is. Examples are jihad and mujahideen. More recently, officials have started using terms with negative connotations like evildoers, this again from a Bush administration report. Colorado's Democratic Congresswoman is calling for a congressional investigation into charges that the Iraqi war veterans near the end of their enlistment were given a choice between reenlisting or being sent back to Iraq. Representative Diana DeJette wants to probe. She made it in a request to the leadership of the House Armed Services Committee, Duncan Hunter, who is Republican. She wants to know whether the White House or the civilian Pentagon officials pressured the military to use coercive tactics to get soldiers to reenlist. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
You train after class every afternoon. With tireless passion and perspiration, you shake your pom-poms, all in awe of Saturday's game day. That's your day, your turn to get the crowd roaring, because you're Bert Buckman, male cheerleader.
Ready? Okay!
Cheer on your favorite college team. The top NCAA games are on Sirius. Go to Sirius.com for the full broadcast game schedule.
This is Earth and Sky on Chesapeake Bay in the eastern U.S.
It's huge, bordering several states, a place where fresh water meets seawater. Some 150 rivers and streams flow into Chesapeake Bay, which once sustained a rich ecosystem teeming with blue crabs and striped bass. But the watershed surrounding the bay is one of the most populated regions of the U.S. As more and more humans moved in, nutrients from wastewater treatment plants and agricultural runoff have entered the bay. Every summer now, these nutrients feed widespread algae blooms that cloud the water.
A century ago, the waters of Chesapeake Bay were so clear that plants grew at depths of more than 7 feet, over 2 meters. Now sunlight can penetrate to plants at only half that depth.
As algae decomposes, it sucks oxygen from the water, causes fish kills, and releases more nutrients that trigger more cycles of algae bloom.
A recent initiative for wastewater treatment improvements in Maryland and more voluntary efforts to decrease fertilizer runoff are initial steps toward restoring the bay. And in some places with good water conditions, restoration is being jump-started by planting aquatic grasses.
We have more about restoring Chesapeake Bay at earthsky.org. Thanks today to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
A pop quiz for parents with third grade teacher, Mr. Bonner.
Today's quiz will test your general knowledge. 1. Name one Hollywood director. 2. Name one actor from a TV sitcom. Number 3. Name one comedian. 4. Name one game show host. 5. Name one professional athlete. Number 6. Name one reality TV show. And one more question worth 100 points. Name one teacher you've met visiting your kid's school.
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school and know about your kid. Find out 100 ways to know more, do more. Visit PTA.org or call 800-307-4PTA. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, part-time Buddhas, delusional, self-centered, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, always welcome here. People that really should either throw out or wash their yoga mat. Good morning to you. Good morning to all the man boys and women girls out there. Of course, a few conservative trolls and freepers that hang around to try to, you know, say that we don't know what we're talking about, that there's no truth there. Some guy actually sent an email the other day, Riley, that said, we are just phonies. We really want Bush to win so we can make more money, so we can stay on the air. Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to do here. We're a reverse psychology propaganda machine trying to get the president into office, you idiot.
Wow.
You know, I forgot to mention, good morning to people that use Coinstar.
That would be about three-quarters of our audience.
That's Mark Riley right there. Yeah, you know, they're fun machines. My producer just came in, and he was all excited. He's like, I just found out that they have Coinstar at the Pathmart that, you know, that Kalo lives by. And he's like, I'm so glad I can, you know, because I got all these coins. And I'm like, yeah, it's great fun, you know. It's great fun to find out how much money you have in that big old, you know, the big old can or jar or whatever you put in your pig, whatever it is we use as a bank or you throw your change in. It's very exciting to go to Coinstar because it's sort of like gambling, or you don't really lose. You know what I mean? You get to put the money in, see how much you have. He's like, I don't know. Larson's amazing. I don't really know I don't think I really care about how much I have. Oh, so it's just a tidying thing. You just want to throw the coins away? Of course you want to know. How could you not make that concession? How can you not say that, like, you know, it's not really about that? No, it's just about I want to get rid of the coin. I want to get rid of the money. It's cluttering up my office. How could you just admit it? Unbelievable. He's like, no, I don't think it's about that. Well, you're lying. Of course you want to know how much you have.
You know what I love about Coinstar? The sounds they make. It sounds like Vegas. It really does. You ever, you know, put the money in and you hear a...
It's one of those things. It's one of those things where you actually feel like you're doing something and being rewarded for it.
Yeah.
Like laundry. I can sit and watch my clothes twirling around in a dryer and actually feel like I'm doing something terrific.
You're making things clean.
Yeah, this is going to be great. Look what I did today.
Yeah.
I didn't write the article I had to write. No, I baked this all cookies. What is that about? What is happening to me, Riley? I'm starting.
You're doing all right, man.
All right, all
you're
right.
Doing okay. The cookies were wonderful.
I'm embracing all sides of me.
Yeah.
I'm embracing the side of me that likes to watch my clothes dry in the dryer. The side of me that makes black
cookies
and white cookies
and brownies for my birthday.
Yeah.
And hey, look, we're all benefiting.
We could be writing a book.
Yeah, but you know what?
Fat.
It's a plot.
Yeah.
You're working for Weight Watchers. Yeah. You're trying to get all of us into a program.
I've done the Weight Watchers. And yeah. I can tell. I did it because, like, when I quit smoking, I put on, like, 20 pounds. I was literally walking around wishing I could rip my skin off of my bones. Do you ever hate yourself so deeply that you're like, wow, can I just crawl? If I cut myself down my stomach, can I just peel open my skin and walk without it? Can I just, like, lop my fat off in chunks?
God, that was a long time ago I felt like that. I don't want to tell you what I was using.
Yeah. I'm just like, it's so disgusting. My mother has planted this seed in my head. Did you know my mother used to put diet pills in my lunch bag? Did I ever tell you,
you
that story?
You told me about that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, you didn't tell everybody about the lovely present she sent you.
Oh, my mom sent me two plaid shirts.
Yeah.
And she seems to send me the same two plaid shirts every birthday I've had my entire life.
But they're linen.
They're
100% linen.
They're very pretty shirts. I'll try to wear one on Tough Crowd tonight. I just don't. She got it in her head at some point in the history of me that plaid shirts was the way to go. And I don't know if I've ever, like, worn, you know, I wear them when I, of course you wear them when you go see them. And of course she's listening to this. She's going to call up Mark. You can return them if you want. I got them at Bloomingdale's. No, the shirts are very nice. What were we talking about? Oh, Weight Watchers. I got so obsessed that this is way too much information. I wish I was talking about, you know, interesting things, but I went to Weight Watchers to lose 20 pounds after I quit smoking. I got up over, like, I got to, like, 200, 201, and it was making me sick. I was literally just tugging at my fat, like, oh, what is this? This is disgusting. Because my mother made me crazy, and I always think about
it. So did you work out, or did you just go to Weight Watchers?
I ran, like, 4 miles a day. You know, like almost 5 days a week, and I went to Weight Watchers. But you get obsessed with the points. You can sit there and do these tabulations. You'll find just scraps of paper all over your house with these, you know, ones and twos and threes in a big long column. And it's not, you know exactly who's on Weight Watchers. If you see any of those laying around someone's house, just this large sort of addition problem with ones, zeros, twos, and threes. That's a Weight Watchers person. I guess you wouldn't actually have to put the zero there, would you? Well, you kind of do because you want to see what you've eaten today. Right, Jonathan? So Jonathan is doing...
Jonathan, well, you cold-blooded.
Jonathan is in the booth right now, Smarty Pants Larson, compulsively eating strips of green pepper, which, of course, is a zero-point food, and you can eat as much of that as your wife can tolerate as far as, you know, what that's going to generate in your colon. Well... Good luck with that. I lost 20 pounds, and I've only recently started to put a little back on because of the hours that we work. I don't even know how many meals I'm up to a day. You know, I don't even know. All I know is, you know, I eat now. I eat very weird times. Have you gained any weight since you've done the show?
I've been actually trying to lose some weight. I've kind of lost a couple, 3 pounds. I haven't worked out over the last couple of weeks because of my toe. But I'm getting back to that because the workout really does help.
Oh, yeah. You got to do the exercise.
Yeah,
but unfortunately,
exercise.
When I get home, you know, after doing this show and after spending a couple hours doing some post-production work, all I want to do is sit and watch television like a sick person.
Yeah, I do that, too. If I don't go to the gym, I'm sitting up watching Perry Mason reruns from 1960, for God's sake.
I know. There are some days after I get done with work here where I feel like I'm staying home from school. You know what I mean? You know what? Something's nagging at me. There's something in the back of my head that there's something that says, why don't they talk about the issues? There's a good question.
Ah.
Well, maybe we will. Do we have any issues to talk about, Mark Riley?
Yeah, we do.
This is an interesting article you just handed me because you know it's right up my alley because you know that recently I've been getting emails. It's like, you guys are anti-Christian. No, we're not. I'm not anti-Christian, all right? It's fine. I don't want to mock the myths that define anybody. You can believe in whatever God you want. It doesn't bother me at all. It's when you claim to be Christian and you're really fascists, that's what bothers me. And when, you know, if you're Christian, act Christian. I'm not judging Christians. When I talk about Christians, I've made it very clear on this show, and I've done it over and over again, I make a separation. There are Christians and there are whack jobs, all right? And the Reverend Jerry Falwell said yesterday that evangelical Christians, after nearly 25 years of increasing political activism, now control the Republican Party and the fate of President Bush in the November election. So how does that make you feel, that they're an organized political movement? with specific, narrow-minded goals that repress the morality of people that don't believe in their particular sky-flying Jew. That, to me, is heinous. I mean, this is a country that's supposed to embrace the freedom of religion, that's supposed to maintain the separation of church and state, yet these people insist that certain elements of secular society connote a moral downslide that is irreversible, and they are willing to sacrifice any sort of assessment of their economic standing in the world as being partially due to Republican policy in order to get behind a guy who's going to deliver them to their God through the rapture. I really believe that there's an active contingent in this government that really sees what's going on as the final conflict. We're all headed for Judgment Day, and I'm a Jew, so as long as I switch over right at the last minute, I'm in either way. And I'm not a religious Jew. You know, I don't believe in God. I believe in coffee. I believed in Weight Watchers for a while, as does Jonathan Larson, Smarty Pants Larson, who now, eating pepper, has found his way in the world.
Jerry Falwell is saying a very scary thing here. He is saying, look, George W. Bush, you owe us. If you get reelected this time around, you had better think about what our agenda is.
He always does so.
Yeah.
They asked Tim LaHaye, I think it was, you know, is your agenda represented, you know, in the White House? And he basically said President Bush is our agenda.
Yeah.
It's one of those guys. Listen to me, and I'm not sure who it is. But here it is, the Big Ten. I tell my Republican friends, this is Falwell, quote, I tell my Republican friends who are always talking about the Big Tent, I say, make it as big as you want, but if the candidate running for president is not pro-life, pro-family, you're not going to win. End quote. And now Big Tent was coined by the late Lee Atwater as chairman of the Republican National Committee. Now, Lee Atwater, who on his deathbed, because he had a tumor in his head that replaced his conscience. All right. This is a guy that, you know, because of his incredible lack of conscience, developed a tumor in his head, and on his deathbed apologized and took back, you know, most of the things he said. And it's damaging and horrendous.
Well, Willie Horton was his brainchild. The Willie Horton ad that many people credit with turning the tide for George W. Bush's father back in 1988. So Atwater had much to atone for. But see, Jerry Falwell, and I hate to use the term atone because it does really sound religious, but Falwell is making a bold, barefaced political play. See, he's a reverend. He is a Christian reverend. But what he's saying is, if you are not prepared to follow the dictates of me and my constituents, we are not going to vote for you, and you will lose.
But he's kissed their ass all along. George Bush has always killed who he said he was going to kill in terms of the death penalty. He's always stood up for gun rights. He's always made sure that he was pro-life in all, you know, in any public statements. If you look at the history of this guy as a politician, you'll see that, you know, from the very beginning, Karl Rove said, these are our people. These people will mobilize for us as long as we give them, or at least tell them we'll give them what they want on these, you know, very specific, narrow-minded, you know, arcane, throwback moral issues. We will be back with your calls. 866-303-2270 is the phone number. It's 17 past the hour. Whatever you want to talk about. Paul Thompson apparently forgot to wake up. So we're waiting for him. He's on his way over from Brooklyn. And I think his alarm clock might need to be in his book. All right, so we'll be back in a second. Air America Radio.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270, or you can check us out at morningsedition.com.
Are you a homeowner in need of a refi to pay off debt, strapped for cash, and need to lower your monthly payments? Save now before rates go back up. Even with less than perfect credit, you can still grab a great rate, even below 6%. That's right. If you own your own home, we can lower your monthly payments. Get cash in your hand, even if you have mortgage late or a past bankruptcy.
This is Jim Eichenbaum with Omega Mortgage Acceptance Corporation. And even if you have less than perfect credit, we can still help you take advantage of rates less than 6%. So don't be misled by empty promises made by other lenders who keep asking for more time and paperwork. At Omega, there's no bait and switch, no upfront fees, just straight talk and honesty.
No need for mountains of documentation or tons of paperwork. We don't even need tax returns. Great if you're self-employed. Just call 888-32-APPLY today. Get approved in less than 20 minutes. We specialize in refis for homeowners just like you. Call 888-32-APPLY right now and lower your monthly payment. Pay off debt, even get cash. Call 888-32-APPLY today. That's 888-322-7759. Licensed by the CalDRE, number 01411312. 888-32-APPLY. Bye.
Yeah, I remember it all right. Back in the mid-50s, a young guitar player was working at an Arkansas roadhouse when two guys start fighting and knock over a kerosene stove, setting the place on fire. Everybody rushes out to safety. The young man realizes his axe is still inside the burning building. Risking his life, he races back to get the guitar that would become known as Lucille, named after the woman those two men were fighting over.
Register to win an autographed B.B. King Lucille on the Sirius Blues page at Sirius.com from Sirius Blues 29.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Hi, my name is Joe from Melrose, Minnesota. Voting for John Kerry because family values is not saddling our kids and grandkids with trillions of dollars in debt. Get out and vote. If you don't vote, you can't complain later.
Glenn from Plumo, Wisconsin. Democrats are telling us the world's coming to an end. The United States is going to become a third world nation. Poverty, starvation is all around the corner. We're done for. But now I have the best paying job I've ever had. My wife has the best paying job she ever had. And we own our own home. Democrats are idiots. I will never, never vote for a Democrat.
Hey, what's up, y'all? It's Samantha Randall from West Virginia. I was just calling to tell y'all, on Election Day, vote for John Kerry all the way, baby.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius.
There's something important you can do to help your child develop properly starting at birth. Have your baby's hearing tested and follow up on any advice you're given. It's easy, inexpensive, and can help you protect your child's ability to learn. For more information, contact the American Speech Language Hearing Association on the web at asha.org or call 1-800-638-8255. 1-800-638-8255.
Oh, my God, it's 21 past the hour. It's Mark Maron. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning. I love this track, man.
Maybe we'll just hang out and listen to music now. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270 right now. What day is today? Tuesday, two more days. But here's my dream from last night. I'm walking around the halls here at Air America Radio, and coming down the hall is Al Franken. For a second, I wonder if I should hide or something, but I'm trapped. Great. He says, Mike? Mark, it's Mark. Oh, yeah, right. Mark, can I talk to you for a minute? I say, sure, Al. Make a mental note. Don't do the laugh. Don't do the laugh. We sit and he opens a paper bag. Bagel? Sure, I say. Schmear? Yeah, he's being nice, but this is extra awkward. He says, Mark, I know we haven't really had a chance to, talk. No, we really haven't, Al. I get up pretty early. I hear your morning show. It's on in the morning, right? Has been poking a little bit of fun at me. I say, yeah, Al, but it's pretty harmless. You know, I think you're great. That's okay. I got a pretty good sense of humor, you know. I was in Trading Places with Eddie Murphy. But do me a favor, stop. Okay, but I got to get back in it. But do me a favor, stop saying it's the Al Franken Network, because I don't own it. I'm not that rich. Almost, but not quite. Okay, Al, but people do call it the Al Franken Network. Well, tell your callers to stop doing that, okay? And one more thing. On my show, is there really that much dead air? Because I don't notice it. How's your bagel? I say, it's good, Al. And the dead air thing's mostly a joke. He says, I hear you do my laugh. Go ahead, do the laugh. I say, are you sure? He said, yeah. So I go, he pats me on the shoulder, gave me one of his CDs, and I don't think I'll ever see him again. I woke up and my bed was filled with SNL reruns. Wow! Did I stay in it? Was it okay? I got a little nasally still. Hey, I'm working on it.
Hey, there you go.
Don't give him any reason to criticize me. This is me. Here we go. Phone calls. Alan, New York. What's going on?
Hey, Alan.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
All right. I tell you, I get up early in the morning and you made me laugh.
Oh, good.
I get fast.
don't know where you get the speed from, man.
It's a lot of Dunkin' Donuts, coffee, and sugar, usually.
Jesus, you must fly home.
Yeah, you know, there's a wall that I hit at around 11:30. You know, I'm like, yes, I'm alive! And then, like, oh, no.
Wow. Well, don't hit it too hard, man.
Okay, buddy. What's up? What's on your mind?
Listen, I got off my ass, and I went up to New Hampshire, and I volunteered, and I will be going back. It's a swing state. The bottom line is this election is about voter registration, getting out those people who sit on their butt and don't vote.
Yes.
And I can't tell you how invigorating it is to do that.
Yeah.
See the people. And that's what I think that what we need to do on Air America and other media outlets that are on our side is get people to volunteer to get out to vote. That's going to be the election decider.
Yeah, we've been pushing for people to go out and vote. I've been trying to make people feel guilty because I've been one of those people. But, you know, you can go to declareyourself.com and do that. You can go to our site, morningsedition.com, and go to register to vote. And there's a lot of other things. Is he still on or is he gone?
No.
Alan, are you still there?
Yeah.
Is there something that we can do? Okay, what is that?
Here's my experience.
Okay.
I registered for various places, and they were inundated. They didn't get back to me. Call up the local Democratic headquarters from any state. Don't wait for the process to get to you. Just go to them. They'll take you with open arms.
Okay. Oh, you mean as far as volunteering to get people out there to register?
As far as registration, too, because time is running out for registration. Another week and a half is going to be too late in many parts of America.
It's so funny. When kids come up to me on the street, these Kerry kids, you know, who are like, you know, out there like, do you want to help defeat George Bush? You know, they're John Kerry's, you know, people who, campaign kids?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really hard for me not to go, I'm doing everything I can. And they're like, yeah, but maybe you ought to, you know, give a little money. I'm like, do you listen to Air America Radio? They're like, I don't know what that is. The Al Franken Network? Oh, yeah. Well, I'm on the morning show on the Al Franken Network.
You have that experience, too.
You do, too?
Yeah, man.
Mindy, Long Island, how are you? Welcome to the Dead Air.
Hi, Mindy.
How are you?
Yeah, what's going on?
My question is, I understand that there are two bills on the floor right now, the House and the Senate, regarding re-implementing the draft.
Re-implementing the draft, yeah.
If that is the case, why there hasn't been a media blitz on this? Why is being kept such a secret?
About the reinstituting the draft? Okay.
Now, Kerry has spoken out and said that if Bush wins the second term, he believes that there will, in fact, be a draft. There have been some Democrats in Congress, most specifically Congressman Charles Rangel from right here in New York, who has advocated for the draft as a way of leveling things out so that it's not just poor people's kids who end up going over to Iraq to fight and die.
Right.
Of course, Congressman Rangel's position is we shouldn't be there in the first place.
Right.
But he figures if we do have to be there, then there ought to be a more representative sample of America sent over.
Right, but they're not going to reinstitute the draft. It doesn't,
well,
I mean...
You know, there's talk about it primarily, Mark, because they don't have enough troops.
Wow.
They can't put 300,000 people in Iraq if you and I win.
God, if they did that today, we'd get, like, MTV. All kids would vote, you know, would vote Kerry right into office.
Yeah, I know. If I was that age, I would.
Yeah, definitely. You know, should we take one more? We're going out. Should we come back?
Well, let's see if we can do one.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's take them on the other side of the break. That's an interesting question, though. I'm going to look some of that up, too. Because I wonder I really wonder what kids would do. Of course they would vote against Bush if they were instituted a draft. It scared the hell out of me, you know, because I didn't want to be sent to war for the wrong reason.
I had a bus ticket to Montreal. You remember, I came up in the middle of Vietnam.
Yeah.
So it was the whole lottery thing, and the guys I knew were going, guys I knew were coming back, and the guys that were coming back were really torn up about their experience. Most of them wouldn't talk about it.
I went and registered. I registered as a conscientious objector. Well, yeah, I registered.
Ooh,
well, I mean, I did. I went to the conscientious objector service or whatever it was. I remember I was 17 when they said you had to register, and then on my registration certificate, I wrote conscientious objector all over it, like that would make a difference. Just so you know.
When we come back, we're going to be dealing with Iraq, Birth of a Nation, the Liberal Confessional.
And maybe Paul Thompson.
When we continue here on Air America Radio. this is Al Franken, the host of the Al Franken Show on Air America Radio. For the last 6 months, we've been doing 3 hours a day of cutting-edge radio programming. We've had guests like Bill Clinton, John Kerry, and Strom Thurmond.
Yeah, Pekka, it knows no bigotry.
We've covered events like the handover of power in Iraq. And we've explained difficult concepts like the growing national debt using nothing more than an ordinary slide whistle. Now we're presenting our show in a convenient, easy-to-use, one-hour version every night on Sundance Channel. Finally, you'll be able to see what we're talking about. Right, Strom?
That's right. Yippee! I'm going on TV.
Tune in every night at 11:30 on Sundance Channel for the Al Franken Show. And if you don't get Sundance Channel, go to their website, sundancechannel.com. Al and Sundance Channel. Together again.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The Bush administration says the number of Iraqi police needed to put down the attacks of the insurgents will have to be increased. Administration is now calling for 135,000 to man the force. Administration officials say the challenges the United States faces in training and deploying the police will be enormous. President Bush says Iraqi voters should be going to the polls in January, even if bombs are descending around them. Bush made the statement in a televised interview last night on Fox TV. Feds admit to lagging in the translation department about 120,000 hours of tapes on potentially valuable terrorism recordings, which could put the country at risk. Voters' rights advocates are criticizing two recent decisions by Ohio Secretary of State J. Kenneth Blackwell that they will say limit unfairly some people's ability to vote on November 2nd. And the death toll from hurricane-ravaged Haiti has reached 2,400. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
In May 2004, Friends is the number one show on TV. The Mets are in the pennant race, and we're just about to find those pesky weapons of mass destruction.
On a massive scale.
Then, 11:15 one night on Raw Dog, Sirius 147.
It's Phil inviting you to join me for Getting Late's 100th episode spectacular. Adam Sandler, Jamie Foxx, George Lopez.
The right. Getting Late 100th episode spectacular. Friday night at 11:15 on Raw Dog, Sirius 147.
This is Earth and Sky. The three biggest threats to Earth's oceans are probably pollution from land, overfishing, and coastal habitat destruction by human activities.
A fourth threat is carried in the ballast water of cargo ships. Cruise ships, tankers, and freighters take in and release thousands of tons of water to maintain balance as they load and unload cargo. For the past 100 years, sea life has been traveling with ships' ballast water from one port to another.
In 1903, plankton from the Pacific found in the North Sea became the first organism known to be spread by ballast water. But it's only been in the last 30 years that scientists have realized the seriousness of the threat. A foreign species in a new habitat can thrive, multiply, and overwhelm native ocean life. That's true of zebra mussels, for example, harmless in their native Europe, very destructive in North America's Great Lakes.
And the smallest creatures might be the biggest danger. Billions of microorganisms can ride in a ship's ballast water. Scientists worry that ballast water might carry diseases between ports. Last February, a United Nations agency adopted a convention requiring ships to treat their ballast water or release it in the open seas where hopefully shoreline species can't survive. Special thanks today to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
Past the hour, morning's edition. I'm wallowing in Markness. That's Mark Riley.
Me too.
Air America Radio. You know, it's interesting, Jonathan Larson and his Corning Star fantasy, that he actually, I think what he's doing, because of his Weight Watchers has already infiltrated his brain so deeply, is that he just wants to make the money lighter. He wants to turn the change into cash money, which is so much lighter. And you can just do that with a machine. Yes, maybe you should try exercising too, Jonathan. We're going to be checking in with Jonathan Larson as he
moves slowly into the room and goes for your neck.
As he climbs this mountain to better fitness. I think it's a great thing. It's a great step, and I wish him luck with it. Hey, Here we go. Since the handover of power, we're exploring various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. This is Iraq, Birth of a Nation, Day 91. Leaders of Iraq. Good morning. Wow, how many are there? Hey, so a report just came out saying that the U.S. is killing twice as many civilians as your insurgents are. Hey, I'm just a messenger. Calm down. No, I don't know why you're upset, because we told you civilians would get killed during this thing, and then they did. Americans keep their word. And no offense, but you guys really do all look alike. Are you a civilian? Are you an insurgent? All we see is you're a guy with a gun, and we came over here to do some killing. You can see how that would be confusing, can't you? Uh-huh. As for your insurgents killing civilians, well, you've got no excuse. You grew up here, you know each other, that's just sloppy. Now, after we cut and run next year, and you didn't hear that from me, when your civil war gets into full swing, you might want to consider getting uniforms. Make things so much easier, and everyone really gets into it. It's like a costume party. Yeah. What's the costume party? Oh, okay. That's when people dress up like something they're not, like in a cowboy hat or a flight suit, but not like a civilian. That's when people get killed. All right? So good luck, and God bless. This is day 91 of Iraq, Birth of a Nation. Live free or die. All right. So what do we got? Speaking of Iraq, here's a phone call that looks like it might be Iraq-centric. Patrick in New Jersey, what do you got?
Hey, Patrick.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right today.
Okay.
I'm from underneath the Hudson River right now.
Yeah, how does your phone work under there?
Oh, pretty well.
Wow.
you're in the tunnel?
I have it in a baggie so it doesn't get wet. Anyway, the whole Yasser Hamdi thing, Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and all that, you know, they're picking up a lot of people that, you know, didn't necessarily have anything to do with any sort of guerrilla activities beforehand, and they picked up some people that did, right?
Right.
So, I don't know, if I were put into some sort of internment camp for a couple of years and hadn't done anything.
Right.
I might have a little bit of a grudge.
I would think so,
Yeah, and the guys that were involved in guerrilla warfare, you know, that speak a different language than their captors might be able to educate the people who previously hadn't been involved somewhat.
Uh-huh.
And, I don't know, maybe act on this grudge they have building, and maybe when they do go back to wherever it is they came from, they might tend to get involved. And that's pretty much the experience that the British had when they had internment in the north of Ireland in the early 70s, that a whole lot of guys who weren't in the IRA, but when they got released, they're being imprisoned unjustly, joined. So
you're saying that in some respects, Gitmo might actually be a training camp for terrorists.
It's Al Qaeda University.
All right. Thanks for your call. That is a possibility, certainly, that if someone is detained and if they were, even if they weren't, like, or I think that they called them a soft terrorist, somebody who was sort of sucked in, but there's no evidence that he was a terrorist. But even if they have a sort of terrorist equivalent of the National Guard, or the person that just is a terrorist on weekends. Certainly, if you go into Guantanamo Bay and you talk to hardcore terrorists, and I think they have this issue in prisons, too, where people convert to religion or whatever, is that the possibility of your grudge or your dissatisfaction turning into full-on fanaticism is very high.
I would think.
But he was in solitary.
He was in solitary. Well, I mean, that's another place where you could just sit and stew for an awfully long time and come out with a very different attitude about things.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if he had to give up his right to sue the government for false imprisonment.
I don't know what. I think that he's probably just excited to get the hell out.
Now, yeah.
And I guess time will tell what really happens. But this is just another example at how this administration, in some respects, in many respects, creates terrorists.
Yeah, and just casts a so much wider net than they need to. Look, no one wants to see terrorists running free on the streets of America.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see people getting blown up. Nobody wants to see planes, you know, being flown into buildings. Nobody wants to see that here.
Right.
But the bottom line is America does and is supposed to stand for something. And if you're not prepared to stand for what, you know, stand for allowing dissent, stand for certain inalienable rights, What's going to happen? Where do you stop the process of giving up your rights so you can feel safer?
That's a slippery slope.
It certainly is.
Towards the big F,
mm-hmm.
the fascism.
The
don't
F-word.
You think? Yeah, and that inalienable rights also it also guarantees the Constitution the separation between church and state.
Don't tell that to Jerry Falwell.
Well, that's the thing is that like as they undermine the Constitution on a legal level, it's slowly being undermined on the other level, the religious level. And does that make any sort of is that a coincidence? Are we heading towards a Christo-fascist country? Are we heading towards a theocracy? Would that make some people more comfortable if everybody told the same lie and acted the same way?
It would make some people much more comfortable. That's the scary part.
What are they going to do about the proliferation of television stations and all the garbage that comes in? How are they going to monitor that? Like, that's a whole other issue. The free speech issue in terms of, like, I was thinking about that. Like, CBS, all these conservatives started emailing CBS about Dan Rather.
To get rid of Dan Rather, who's no liberal himself.
Yeah, and that in some way is a stifling of free speech. You know what I mean? To want to shut somebody up, to get them out of their place where they can talk as opposed to just turn the channel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, see, here's the thing. These people have the right to do what they're doing.
Yeah.
But what they don't seem to understand is the answer to bad speech is better speech.
Right.
If you don't like Dan Rather, then watch somebody you like. You got Brit Hume. What's the problem?
Exactly. Make a different choice. Don't be a douche.
There you go.
But then, like, I also read that there was Jewish organizations that started emailing Amazon.com, or Walmart initially. Walmart was selling the Turner Diaries on their website. Now, it was the Protocols of Zion.
Protocols of the Elders of Zion. A clearly, by the way, discredited track.
Right. But so this Jewish organization says, how can you offer this on your website? How can you know, this should be not, it should be available. And Dan Rather should keep his job. Just don't buy it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That is what the Constitution guarantees us, underneath this, free speech guarantee, is that, we should be able to buy this stuff. You just make the different choices.
Yeah. And I think that, people who would be tempted to buy the Protocols of the Elders of Zion need to know, is it so difficult for Walmart to say, we're selling this book, but it is, in fact, a discredited tract that people have found to be full of crap years ago. Why?
Yeah.
You can say that. This is America.
Yeah, it gets a little tricky when the left becomes the censor. You know what I mean? It gets a little tricky as that happens. So we got to talk about that when we come back if we want to. But I think maybe we ought to get into Iraq a little bit.
Yeah.
So we'll be back. It's 41 past the hour, Air America Radio.
From New Orleans.
Saints have retaken the lead.
To Oakland.
Touchdown, Raiders!
And from Florida.
He made the grab! Touchdown, Jacksonville!
To Washington.
Touchdown, Washington Redskins!
Every game, every week, everywhere. Go to Sirius.com for the full game schedule and for live 24/7 football. Tune in to Sirius NFL Radio 124.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Hi, this is Nathan Hartley from Cleveland, Ohio, and November 2nd may be the most important day that we have, so please vote. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Marcus Rogers from the Eastern Shore, Virginia. Vote is the main thing. If we can't vote, then we ain't got no reason to live. All right, y'all be safe. Keep it real. Bye.
This is Nancy calling from Central Texas, and I will absolutely for sure be voting for John Kerry because the thought of four more years of Bush and his cronies in office is positively frightening.
This is Rebecca from Worcester, Ohio, and all I have to say is Bush must go. So let's stop beating around the bush, America. We can do better. Get out there and vote.
Yo, what up? This is Juan encouraging you all to get out there and vote.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius.
My dad can throw a baseball 100 million feet.
Yeah, well, my dad can throw a football 1,000 bazillion feet. That's twice as far.
So, my dad can hold his breath underwater for 5 minutes.
That's nothing. My dad can make a 360 two-handed backward slam dunk with his eyes closed.
Yeah. Well, my dad, he can make quarters come out of his nose.
Big deal. My dad can eat a whole jalapeno pepper in one bite.
Get out.
Yep, that's impossible. He'd explode. Boom!
Kids who spend time with their fathers are less likely to get in trouble or fail in school. Be there for your kids. Give them someone to brag about. Remember, it takes a man to be a dad.
My dad can smash a soda can with his head.
No way!
Uh-huh, I saw him do it.
Cool.
Then we took him to the hospital.
Call 1-800-790-DADS for more information. A public service message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council.
Here's a safety tip we can all live with. Children should ride in the rear seat whenever possible and should always be buckled up, especially if your car has airbags. Remember, never place a rear-facing child's safety seat in the passenger seat if you have an airbag. Patterns set early become patterns for life. Set them early. It's a safety tip we can all live with. Brought to you by the National Safety Belt Coalition.
SE.
Riley, Mark, that's Mark Riley over there. I'm Mark Maron. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Wow, I was just spacing out.
Really?
I was just sitting there spacing out. You know when you space out so much that you're like, oh, where am I? How come there's some people in my room? Oh, I know you guys. We've been here all morning. So what is going on with this, Riley? U.S. troops have tried to win over residents in Romney, but a surge in abductions and killings is threatening to create another Fallujah.
Yeah. But a different kind of Fallujah. Ramadi's a different city than Fallujah. Ramadi is a university town, a place where a lot of intellectuals live.
So is there a Starbucks there, you think?
Could be.
Maybe just a home-owned coffee shop. Yeah. I don't want to trivialize the horror. Okay, let's talk about some more.
Well, here's what's happening. I mean, we're talking now about a city that's in the Sunni Triangle. This is a city that Sunnis are dominant. Sunnis, of course, are the folks that gave us Saddam Hussein.
Right.
Although that may not be a totally fair assessment.
Sunni via the Baathists.
Yeah, via the Baathists. Yeah. As opposed to the Shiites,
right,
who are, you know, in the apparently constant and perpetual state of anger against the Sunnis.
Right.
But
tribal stuff.
Yeah. They're starting to see a lot of activity toward the American troops, a lot of violence toward American troops, and a lot of violence toward people who they see as collaborating with the Americans. Remember, some months ago, we were talking about the idea that some Iraqis view Iyad Alawi's government similar to the way the French viewed the Vichy government during World War II.
Uh-huh.
In other words, Nazi sympathizers, people who were appointed by the Nazis to run France.
Right.
Well, that's how a lot of people, particularly in Ramadi, who, you know, I mean, these are folks who are university educated. They have that sense of history.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a quote in there about, I believe it's an American official, who said that some of the people in Ramadi walked up and called the Americans Nazis.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is almost like a student uprising in some respects.
In a lot of respects, they're saying, look, we do not want to be associated or affiliated with a puppet government. They've had a couple of people, a governor's kids were kidnapped, a deputy governor was kidnapped and murdered. They're starting to use the same tactics as some of the other insurgencies. Again, a different insurgency than in Fallujah is going on in Ramadi.
But this is a great example of what, you know, Mick Ware will talk about and sometimes Peter Birkin, is that the insurgency in all its many faces is attracting regular Iraqis into the nationalistic fervor or the nationalistic ideology, which is essentially that we want an Iraq for Iraq run by Iraqis who are not without intervention.
Yeah, and essentially get the Americans out. Get the American influence government out. Now, America had a window of opportunity when they turned over power to Alawi to maybe make him at least seem to be a more indigenous-based leader, someone who could have won over the Iraqis. I think, Mark, quite frankly, that time has passed. I don't think that opportunity exists anymore.
It didn't seem like anybody really bought it. You know what I mean? You know, with all the Chalabi scandal and with all the interim government scandal, and then that guy comes in out of where, you know, and he was a Baathist, and he used to be a CIA stooge. And, you know, it's like it really, I don't think a lot of the country ever really bought it. It was always pretty clear to most of them that this dude was a puppet and that this dude was being backed by the U.S. And even when he comes here, and the way George Bush talks about him, the credibility of his government has got to be almost nothing there. And from all indications, that's what the reporters we have on the ground there say.
Are saying, yeah. And see, the danger with Ramadi is that it could become another Fallujah in that coalition troops and the Iraqi troops simply move out of the city and give it to the insurgents. Now, the American military doesn't want to see that happen. Alawi, quite frankly, doesn't want to see that happen. He wants to, you know, give the appearance that he remains in control of a major city like Ramadi. But the fact of the matter is he's now dealing with many of the tribes. And we've talked before about the influence, the very profound influence that many of these tribes and tribal histories, tribal rivalries have in certain parts of Iraq. Well, this is one of them.
Yeah.
And the idea now is that they've managed to get the tribes behind the insurgency, behind the idea of, you know, our main purpose is to get the Americans and Iraqi sympathizers out. It may be more difficult to attack and kill Americans, but certainly the Iraqi sympathizers, and with, you know, Mark, with word now that, you know, the coalition troops are killing as many people, the coalition and Iraqi troops are killing as many people as the insurgents. You know, they're in a great win-win situation here. They go out and can go out and argue to people on the streets of Ramadi. Look, it is not us who's killing you; it's them.
Yeah, and then they can just say, "You don't believe me? See?"
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's truly a scary situation because now you're going to end up having to put more weight on the American military if people pull out. Sooner or later, they're going to have to come back in.
And also, this phase of the insurgency is primarily nationalistic. It's not the radical jihadists.
No.
You know, what they're talking about is a nationalistic, you know, Iraq for Iraq mode of the face of the insurgency. The insurgency has many faces, and a lot of them all have the same agenda, which is to get rid of the Americans one way or the other. And that's, I think, the big fear of civil war between jihadists and different members of the Sunni and the Shiites and also the nationalists. You know, it's just a powder keg. It's a classic quagmire.
Well, see, the other thing that's starting to happen, Mark, is that a lot of these tribal groups are starting to see the successes of the religious insurgencies. And saying, well, wait a minute, if we can't figure out any other way to deal with these people, we'll deal with them the same way the religious people do. We'll do the same thing that the al-Sadrs and the others are, you know, we'll use the same methodology. It seems to be working for them. Why shouldn't it work for us?
Right. But I know. It's very scary that, you know, how little control the Americans seem to have there, and also how much this president continues to say that everything's working just the way it should be. It's ridiculous. It's 51 past the hour. Well, stay on the line. We'll take the calls when we come back in a second on Air America Radio.
LegalTees.net, the website where you'll find the t-shirts that are funny, whimsical, political, and maybe even controversial. Do you know why sharks don't attack lawyers? I speak basic. What do you speak? To find the answers, go to LegalTees.net. That's LegalTees.net. You can choose computer tees, legal tees, political tees, or custom make your own shirt. Go to LegalTees.net and decide for yourself.
You will not be considered unpatriotic if you disagree with our shirts.
Crimes Against Nature, a new book by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., sets the record straight on George W. Bush, corporate greed, and the plunder of America. Crimes Against Nature makes the case that the administration has taken corporate cronyism to unprecedented heights, threatening our health, our national security, and our democracy. Al Franken calls Crimes Against Nature a passionate and devastatingly written attack on the Bush administration. Crimes Against Nature, the national bestseller by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a HarperCollins book. Now available at bookstores and online at airamericaradio.com.
From New Orleans.
Touchdown! And the Saints have retaken the lead.
To Oakland.
Touchdown! Raiders!
And from Florida.
He made the grab! Touchdown, Jacksonville!
To Washington.
10-5, touchdown, Washington Redskins.
Every game, every week, everywhere. Go to Sirius.com for the full game schedule and for live 24/7 football. Tune in to Sirius NFL Radio 124.
Hello.
Hi, Bill. This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving.
Mm.
And I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can.
It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Let's be blunt about marijuana. Did you know, as many kids do, that blunt is street slang for a hollowed-out cigar filled with marijuana? Sometimes blunts contain marijuana mixed with cocaine, crack, PCP, methamphetamine, even embalming fluid. How's that for a reality check? Learn to have a blunt talk with your kids about drugs. Call 1-800-729-6686 for a free copy of Keeping America's Youth Drug Free.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi!
Morning's Edition, Air America Radio, broadcasting from the capital of the liberal elite here in New York City. I will be honest, I'm a Jew. I did not go to temple. I did not fast on Yom Kippur. That's just part one of what is going to unfold into a full-on confession. Sometimes it's not easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time. So when I need to unburden myself, I step into the Morning's Edition confessional. Bless me, Brother Riley. I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
It's George W. Bush. I'm so ashamed, man.
What is it, young man? Do you find him inspiring?
No, it's worse than that, man.
Do you find him enlightening?
No, it's worse, dude. Sometimes I find him funny. I find him funny. He says stuff that really makes me laugh sometimes. And I mean, I dig his conceptual bits, like when he looked under his desk in the Oval Office and said, are there any weapons of mass destruction here? It was dark, man. I mean, it was, and there's a real virtuosity in his comedic technique. Bush not only comes up with the sick joke, he creates a situation that makes a sick joke necessary. I mean, even Lenny Bruce can pull that off, man.
Mark, my son, your whole concept of comedy has become soiled and sullied. You need to empty your mind and start anew. I want you to cleanse yourself of all that is humorous and funny in this world. And you know what that means.
You want me to watch According to Jim?
Repeatedly, over and over again, until all whimsy has been cast out from your soul, and thus your sense of humor can be born again. Now go forth and sin no more.
Okay, man, thanks.
Amen.
Joe in Kentucky listening to Sirius, which I just got in my house. How are you, Joe?
Hey, Joe.
Just fine, Mark.
Okay. What's on your mind, buddy?
There's over 70% unemployment over there in that country, and that's because we went in there and blew the hell out of everything that they had.
Right, and then we sent contractors in to try to rebuild it and, you know, deplete their country even more of whatever resources and money it had.
The whole thing with all these people over there, the insurgents, well,
yes,
they're just normal people. If, you know yourself, if you didn't have a job and the only thing you could do was either work for whoever took your job, which, you know, for the cops or police or whatever
right.
you want to call them,
sure.
or work against them people and become an insurgent, what would you do?
Exactly. It's amazing. This president is losing jobs worldwide, Joe.
Yeah, he sure is.
Yeah. And, you know, there's something really insidious about this, because you have to ask yourself, why are there so many people in Iraq who are willing to become policemen, who are willing to become part of the military, when that's so dangerous? They're using car bombs to blow up half the police stations and military recruiting stations in the country. Why? Because there's no other work for people.
They're starving to death.
Yeah. Exactly. And now, like, so much money has been refunneled into security, and now they have real infrastructure problems, sewage problems, and you would think that they would start hiring, you know, people who live there to start doing this work, but it's so damn dangerous that they can't even get anyone to work for, because there's so much violence going on.
Well, maybe not now, but boy, there sure was a big opportunity, a big window there before all this garbage started.
That's absolutely right.
They didn't do a thing.
That's right. If it had been handled differently, with more international support, and maybe not at all, you know, if we had waited, you know, maybe something else would have happened for those people.
Something smarter would have happened. Joe, thanks a lot for that call. In the next hour of Morning's Edition.
Paul Thompson, maybe? For five
Paul
minutes?
Thompson, perhaps. Recovery Corner, for sure. Tax expert David K. Johnston looks at possible tax changes in a second Bush term, the liberal agenda, and much more. All for you on Air America Radio.
out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
This is Bob from Chicago, and we got to get Bush out of the White House. I'm definitely voting for John Kerry because I don't want to spend my twilight years living in the United States of Nazi Germany. Is that too much to ask?
This is Julie in Los Angeles, and anyone who thinks Kerry isn't talking about the issues or that both candidates have the same plan isn't paying attention. This election is so important. Please give it some real thought and get out and vote. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Tom in Missouri. I'm voting for John Kerry in the upcoming presidential election. George Bush and the people who tell him what to do have botched everything they've gotten their hands on.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius. Uncensored.
Uncensored.
Uncut.
Uncut.
Satellite fresh.
Satellite fresh.
Sirius, it's on.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. Disturbing news this hour from the FBI with respect to thousands of hours on untranslated audio recordings from terror and espionage investigations. This despite large increases in money and personnel for translations since the 2001 terror attacks in the country. Agency Inspector General Glenn Fine discovered that a third of Al-Qaeda's intercepts authorized by a secret federal court were not reviewed within 12 hours of collection as required by the leadership of the agency. Latest development fuels greater speculation over the nation's ability to thwart a possible future terrorist attack. Information from the government also illuminates charges by John Kerry and other leading Democrats who for months have been saying the Bush administration has done nothing to protect Americans against attacks. Bush's reelection campaign is leaving nothing to chance in their bid to reclaim the White House. Report says the campaign is enlisting recruit volunteers for their Get Out the Vote effort by offering a coveted spot to see or sit next to President George W. Bush at a campaign stop, only if they are willing to put in a few hours manning a campaign phone bank or put up lawn signs for Bush-Cheney. New York Times says the campaign strategy is a sharp contrast to the John Kerry campaign, which has been focused on attracting the undecided voter. U.S. government officials yesterday admitted that the same intelligence unit that painted a dismal picture in July about the prospect of growing instability in Iraq warned the Bush White House about the potential costly consequences of an American-led invasion. This some 2 months before the war began. Reports by the National Intelligence Council warned Bush in January 2003 that an American invasion would boost support for political Islam and result in a deeply divided Iraqi society. An Egyptian company says one of its four workers who had been kidnapped in Iraq has been freed. It says it can't give the status of the others being held hostage, but says it is doing its best to secure their release. Egypt says the other hostages should be freed soon. An Egyptian official says the kidnapping was motivated by financial reasons, although the company did not say anything about a ransom. A total of six Egyptians from two companies were kidnapped in Iraq last week. This is the first to be released. No group has claimed responsibility for the abductions. A little over a month before the election, a federal appeals court yesterday brought back to life a lawsuit demanding that all Florida voters who use touchscreen machines receive a paper receipt in case a recount becomes necessary. The appeals court told a federal judge in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, to reopen the case, which could affect some 15 Florida counties whose electronic voting terminals do not issue paper ballots. Still unknown is whether the case could be decided before the November 2nd deadline. And President Bush and John Kerry took a break from their respective practice sessions in preparation for Thursday's debate to accuse each other of a lack of clarity on Iraq. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Will.
May 2004. Friends is the number one show on TV. The masks are in the pennant race. And we're just about to find those pesky weapons of mass destruction.
On a massive scale.
Then, 11:15 one night on Raw Dog Sirius 147.
It's Phil inviting you to join me for Getting Late's 100th episode spectacular. Adam Sandler, Jamie Foxx, George Lopez.
The all right. Getting Late 100th episode spectacular. Friday night at 11:15 on Raw Dog Sirius 147.
This is Earth and Sky with a question from Joe in Virginia. He asks, how far below the surface does a hurricane affect the ocean? Do the fish notice what's going on?
Joe, out at sea, a hurricane churns just the surface of the ocean. Fish that live near the surface do feel a little turbulence. Research indicates that fish may avoid the washing machine motion by swimming a little deeper. But in general, for a fish out at sea, a hurricane is no big deal.
In coastal areas, on the other hand, hurricanes have much more impact on fish. For example, sometimes a hurricane blows seawater toward shore. That makes the coastal water more salty than normal, which can attract fish that usually live in the open ocean. Other times, a hurricane brings heavy rain and fresh water floods the coast. This fresh water is less dense than the salt water, so it floats on seawater like salad oil on vinegar. The density difference prevents oxygen from mixing into the salty bottom layer. Bottom-dwelling fish might feel stressed. They can develop sores and lesions or other signs of disease.
Storm surges can also break up coral, tear up beds of seagrass, or smother these habitats with silt. So after a hurricane rips through, fish, just like humans, may have a hard time finding food and shelter. Joe, thank you for your question, and thanks to the National Science Foundation, which makes our show possible. I'm Joel Block with Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
Hey, this is June. I'm from Lancaster, South Carolina. It's important to vote because we are the future. We make Sirius happen.
Woo! This is Rick calling from Georgia, and I just feel this election is all about maintaining the personal freedoms and civil liberties we have, and we just need to get out and vote and make sure that we address our needs.
This is Lucy Pond calling from Austin, Texas. I just want to tell everybody it's important that y'all get out there and vote because we want to choose the right leader, not the wrong one, and have a great president to represent our country.
My name is Joan. I'm from New Jersey. I'm voting for John Kerry in November. I hope that all of you, regardless of your beliefs, get out there and exercise this very special right, and I hope you vote for John Kerry.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Buy a truck. There are no Russians. There are no peoples. There are no Russians. There are no Arabs. There are no third worlds. There is no West. There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immane, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars. Petrodollars, electrodollars, multidollars, Reichmarks, yep. Rands, rubles, pounds, and shekels. It is the international system of currency which determines the totality of life on this planet.
That one, that's from Network, and I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, geniuses. Good morning, part-time Buddhas, delusional, self-centered, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Welcome. People that really should either throw out or wash their stinky yoga mats, welcome, really. It's nice to have you. I repeat this greeting every hour because I think it's important on a day-to-day level to open up the big tent to man boys, women, girls, everybody who wants to listen. But I think it's very telling, these segments from Network, and it's a very prophetic movie. And the other one, because we're fleshing something out here in a moment about the way the Bush administration will always rule on behalf of corporations and corporate entities. Always. They are trying to redefine the way the world works. I mean, it's already working in that, you know, corporate oligarchy sense, but they want to make it even worse for individual humans, you know, as far as, you know, protecting their existence on this planet. Between tort reform and some other regulations that we're going to talk about in a minute, the sympathy from this administration and from, you know, the conservatives in general will always fall on the corporate entity, and will always seek to protect the corporate entity, and they will start to work in deaths, you know, in terms of tort reform. If they put a cap on that, you know, it will stop the individual from being able to sue for enough money to make the corporation really pay, and pay where it hurts, in the pocketbook.
Or even pay for medical expenses that may have happened because of a corporation's negligence, for God's sake.
Really, right, to actually get justice.
You want to break this down into its simplest element?
Sure.
Corporations, their lobbyists, and all the rest of them are the Johns. Guess what the Bush administration is?
The pimp?
No.
Sorry.
The hoe.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Collectively, they're the ones that are accommodating.
Right. For some reason, I thought that they were also facilitating. So I saw them as you know, giant pimps, and the corporations were actually part. I guess they can wear both hats if they really
want to. They could, yeah. But, I mean, the corporations have these lobbyists.
Yeah.
And they go into these different agencies.
I'm still beating myself up for not getting the question right.
Don't worry about that. No, see, here's the thing. You look, and remember, Mark, that a few months ago we talked about how some agencies had been staffed by people who had either previously been lobbyists on behalf of corporate interests,
right,
or Bush administration flacks and lackeys.
So now
they're in these agencies on decision-making levels, and here come these lobbyists who say, among other things, let's look at, for example, mad cow disease.
So in that sense, they're sort of pimping for the corporations if they're bringing in the lobbyists as actual members of the administrations. So the administrations can both be whores and pimps. So look at me. I'm hung up on this idea. Like, you know, like, hey, man, I want to be hip to the whores and pimps metaphor. No, it's good. It's good. I'm just an idiot. But, yeah, now what's happening here with the information that I have in front of me, if you can help me flesh it out, is that they're putting on hold enacting any sort of regulations because they don't have to.
They don't have to. They want to wait until after the election. They're assuming Bush will win, and that way all of these regulations, and in many instances, these are regulations that industry opposes, and they won't get implemented.
Why? Because no one's taking them to task on it. It would seem that, you know, are the Bush followers, you know, pro? They're obviously they are. Marin, come on, wake up. They're obviously pro-deregulation. They don't want regulation. The less regulation, the better for these free market whack jobs.
Exactly.
And, of course, the Christian right, theocratic fascist contingent of the base doesn't care about all this because they don't have the money and they're going to be screwed anyways, and they just want to, you know, make sure they're delivered to the proper place on Judgment Day.
This is what the Bush administration has managed to do. They have managed to convince all these evangelicals that they have some common cause with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, the cattle and feed industry, the four regional Bell phone companies, healthcare providers, big media, timber and mining.
Exactly. So, you know, what the illusion of convenience and safety in this country is in a lot of respects, another form of propaganda. Because, you know, I remember when the mad cow showed up in Washington. I remember that. That means there was a mad cow in Washington that was being ingested by Americans, possibly, which means to my father, who, you know, in his paranoia and in his panic, is fairly, you know, sometimes intuitive. And he said to me, don't eat the meat anymore because it's here. I mean, there's no way it's not here. You're talking about, you know, if one cow's got it, it's in the food supply somewhere. And what happens is after a certain point in time, if it stays out of the news, you're sort of like, it's all right. I want a hamburger. You know, what are the odds? All right, maybe the odds are on your side, but the odds that the corporations are thinking of, the meat industry, the meat lobbying, the people lobbying for the meat industry is, look, even if it is here, we got to keep the wraps on this because it's really going to put a dent in our profits, and this country cannot afford to have a dent be put into the meat industry's profits. So let's say it pops up, and let's say a few thousand people die. First of all, here's what's genius about Mad Cow, is that it doesn't even turn up for 20 years, and it looks exactly like Alzheimer's. Who's going to blame us? It's perfect. Don't worry about it. Just make sure the press shuts its mouth, and we keep stuffing meat down their faces and into their colons.
Well, see, this is one of the things that the Bush administration has been continually, I guess, for want of a better term, bending over for.
Mm-hmm.
What the cattle industry is afraid of is that the regulations themselves are going to cost them money. That's how cheap they are. Their thing is, if we implement these new rules and regulations, that in and of itself, never mind the lost profits from people being scared of mad cow, it costs too much money to implement the regulations. They're, just like the big automakers used to say, well, it's going to cost us too much to make really safe cars or to make cars that get 50, 60 miles a gallon.
The auto industry will write off, and this is common knowledge, that, you know, if something, they will literally judge whether or not it'll cost too much to recall an unsafe car, they'll judge that against how much it would cost to settle lawsuits for people to actually get hurt or killed in the car. And what you're saying is true, but this is really small. They just don't want to make any changes, even if it doesn't housing costs that much. They don't want to spend any money. If, you know, anything costs too much to them, if it's going to make, you know, require extra workers or extra technology. I mean, they say they put something in place recently to sort of test for mad cow, but they don't. Basically, it's just a guy standing there like, that one looks a little tired.
Yeah.
You know what? But like, they push it. No, it didn't fall over. It's probably okay. You know, come on, bring it through.
See, this is the danger. And again, it's election year politics at its absolute worst. Bush knows that he can help his friends and to some extent punish his enemies, and you might include among his enemies the American consumer, by delaying these regulations, by waiting until after the election, and then do, just like he did with the energy thing.
Right.
You know, call in Dick Cheney and five of his closest buddies, and they develop the energy policy. That is outrageous, but that's exactly what happened. And you watch, if this guy wins a second term, all bets will be off. Big media will get bigger. The telecommunications industry will get precisely what it wants out of government.
Right. Welcome to Channel One, the only channel available.
There you go.
Viacom presents Channel Us. It's just us, and this is the only information you need coming from the winner of the great media monopolization. Channel One, all the information you need, dummy.
Yep. And given by Mark the Shark, if we're not careful.
The consumer is, exactly. The consumer is not the enemy. It's just we're the disposable middleman in this process of free market. You know what I mean? It's like waves will die. It's like there's planned obsolescence. The lifespan of a human being is the planned obsolescence of this particular, you know, of the human artifact. It's a very strange thing that, you know, cigarettes, they're just starting to pay right now. They're just getting their due in court, and they knew this is going on for what, 50 years? That people were dying. You know, how could people not know? That's the weird thing about cigarettes. They had a real racket on people, the really, you know, good stuff. Because you smoke for 5 years, and you're like, what is that? You know what it is. You're not stupid. But something inside you doesn't want to believe that.
But see, there's history in that, Mark. It was the American government that gave cigarettes out to soldiers during the First World War.
Oh, yeah.
It was supposed to be accommodative. It was supposed to calm their nerves. Remember, you know, these are our Americans fighting in trenches over there. This was a very different kind of warfare than Americans were used to. And cigarettes were an integral part of, you know, trying to keep American soldiers fighting on the battlefront.
That and Benny's.
Yeah, them too.
Amphetamines, Benzedrines. Keep going, fellas. They still have those when people are flying.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't read. I didn't read that chapter.
I'm not really. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with people taking stuff to stay up if they have to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you have to, you have to. But the weird thing is that even at the Department of Agriculture, and the pillars in the lobby of the Department of Agriculture, if my recollection serves me, ornamentation are actual tobacco leaves. A good part of our agricultural economy was built on tobacco. But what I was saying is that generations of people have died from smoking-related illness.
Absolutely.
So, like, you know, the government and the corporations, just look at those people. They're going to get away with whatever they can get away with for the least amount of money and the most amount of profits, no matter how many people die, for as long as it takes. And when the crap hits the fan, they will do everything in their power to manipulate and bend the law so they don't take that big a hit. And these are the people that the Bush administration panders to.
Yes, absolutely. And the amazing thing, again, is that they can make common cause between evangelicals and people who you just got the same thing, didn't you?
Yeah, well, we got, let's go. Yeah, turns out Paul Thompson's here, and the next guest is sort of, what is it, really raining out there? 17 past the hour, we're going to have Paul Thompson in a second on Air America Radio.
This year, I'm hearing two kinds of political humor. Type 1 is the standard fare of Leno, Letterman, and that crew. Easy, cheap shots that are rooted in media stereotypes. You know, George Bush is a moron, John Kerry is a flip-flopper, that type of joke. These are to humor what Chicken McNuggets are to cuisine. They make us laugh, McNuggets will fill you up, but they also reinforce all that's stupid, shallow, and incurious about our political culture. Empty humor calories. The other kind of humor makes us laugh while cutting towards some deeper truth. Okay, so George Bush is thick as a brick. How does he get away with all this stuff? While Daily Show host Jon Stewart interviewed news guy Wolf Blitzer recently, Stewart, in his funny, unique way, asked Blitzer how the mainstream news corps had been so unskeptical of the Bush pretext for the war with Iraq. And there, in the midst of a comedy show, Blitzer cops to groupthink on the part of the media. You could surf the news channels for weeks and never find that insight into today's politics, but it was there on a comedy show. This has been a Mother Jones Minute.
You train after class every afternoon. With tireless passion and perspiration, you shake your bonbons, all in awe of Saturday's game day. That's your day, your turn to get the crowd roaring, because you're a Bert Buckman, male cheerleader.
Ready? Okay!
Cheer on your favorite college team. The top NCAA games are on Sirius. Go to Sirius.com for the full broadcast game schedule.
Has someone offended you? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. If a family member, friend, coworker, or even a boss has said or done something to upset you, what should you do? Tell other people? Well, no. You need to go to that person and gently let them know how they've hurt you. If they don't respond, bring along one or two other people and approach them again. In doing all this, be sure you're coming to them with clean hands, without any grudges of your own. When you work for unity in your relationships, you'll be amazed at the results. Remember, your family first.
The Family Minute with Mark Merrill is a production of Family First. To find some great resources for strengthening your family, go to FamilyMinute.net. That's FamilyMinute.net. Or call 1-800-956-8300. That's 1-800-956-8300.
They're in your bathroom cabinet, under the kitchen sink, in your garage. They're ordinary household products that kids as young as 10 sniff to get high. What these kids don't know is that sniffing can cause instant death. Talk to your kids. Know where they're going, who they're with, and what they're doing. If you know what your kids are up to, they're much less likely to sniff inhalants. Awareness. The anti-drug.
The guest in studio, 20 past the hour, is Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Paul Thompson, who claims that it was traffic that didn't wake him up today when we called.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Paul Thompson, of course, the compiler, author, and obsessive archivist of the Terra Timeline, a minute-by-minute, day-by-day, year-by-year. What's the rest of the title?
You got it.
All right. Lead up to 9/11. He's been on the show a couple of times. It's a tremendous resource, this book, if you want to learn something about what led up to 9/11 every time you go to the bathroom.
The most well-sourced book in the history of publishing.
Exactly. It's a great book to have in the bathroom because, you know, you can just read a chunk, and every time you get done going to the bathroom, not only was that rewarding, but you can go, and I learned something. Hold on a minute. Here's the presidential pompa. We get this, you know, the schedule, president's schedule every day, Paul. This is the real one, all right? Here we go. 6:30 a.m. Wake up in Crawford. Stay on message. Thank God I don't have to go to Ohio today. 10 a.m. Stand in front of a mirror practicing debate zingers. Remain presidential while mirror insults you. 11 a.m. Play Monopoly with John Kerry, debate dummy. Be firm this time. I'm the race car. He's the iron. 12 noon. Talk to Bruce Valanche about debate zingers. Explore the Kerry's got a long face angle. 1 p.m., call in to Bill O'Reilly's show and say, yeah, this is George, I mean Jim, from Crawford. After seeing your brilliant interview with George W. Bush, why do we even have to have debates? Game's over as far as I'm concerned. 2 p.m., play lawn darts with John Kerry, debate dummy. Tell him yesterday's win was a fluke. 4 p.m., call Jeb in Florida to ask him, wet enough for you? Because they're hurricane. 10 p.m. bedtime. Bring debate dummy to bed. Smother it with pillow. All right, Paul Thompson. Here's what's going on in the world today. All right, they just found out that there's like literally just tons of unlistened to, untranslated FBI tapes of untranscribed tapes of overhearing terrorist conversation. Perhaps. What do you make of that?
Well, have you ever heard of a woman named Sabelle Edmonds? Did you ever have her on
the
show?
We did have her on our show.
We did have her on.
Early on, before she was told that she could never talk again.
Well, this really goes with what she has to say, because she was hired as an FBI investigator just after 9/11, and she was told that actually She would come into work, and her boss at the end of the day would say, delete all your work that you've done over the course of the day. She was translating very important Al-Qaeda messages just after 9/11 about new terror attacks, all kinds of things, and the boss was saying, delete the messages, because he wanted a bigger budget. He wanted just sort of busy work, not actually complete the work, so that they could say, we're not getting enough done, give us more money, give us more resources.
God, they politicized everything, these bastards.
Well, you know, they succeeded, though. They were getting 21.5 in 2001, now they're getting 70 in 2004.
But yet they were telling people not to do their jobs in order to get more money?
Yeah, so this report that just came out, this is partly to do with her pressure to try to find out exactly what's going on.
Let me correct the number. Hundreds of thousands of hours of untranslated audio recordings from terror and espionage investigations. Hundreds of thousands of hours?
Yeah, and that report also goes on to say that there are important, well, potentially important Al-Qaeda messages that were deleted, because they get a new batch in, and the ones that they didn't finish, you know, somehow end up in the trash.
Wow. I don't understand. Why didn't the FBI take a bigger hit with the intelligence hearings? I mean, what do you think? Because obviously George Tenet took the fall because of the Iraqi intelligence, and he was the guy that took the hit for global intelligence on the Iraq war. But why? What is the weird alliance between the U.S. government and the FBI that they weren't made to pay for this stuff?
Well, it was really bizarre, because in the hearings, you had the day before Mueller came in to testify, the head of the FBI, they had this really harsh report that slammed the FBI, and then he comes in, and the 10 9/11 commissioners, Democrats and Republicans, they're all falling over each other saying how great he is. Oh, I just can't say enough about your good work. They have him come in for an hour, and they don't even have questions enough for him to ask him questions for an hour. Before the hour is up, the head commissioner says, we just don't have anything else to ask you about.
That's just so suspect, because you know what? Do you think it goes back to that weird sort of alliance established by J. Edgar Hoover, where you needed to trust J. Edgar Hoover because there's a real good chance he's got some dirt on you and you don't want to get on his bad side? Do you think that still exists within the political world? That Mueller, like, it's like, you better say you like him, because whatever you've got lurking behind you, he's got a dossier on you.
Yeah, right?
Well, I don't know about that. One way you can cut him some slack is he only started as director of the FBI about a week before 9/11. So
right.
You could say, well, he didn't really know what was going on. But, for instance, the Sybil Edmonds stuff about the translations, this is all having to do with after 9/11 and the failure to translate things from then up until now. That's all on his watch.
Right. That's like, it blows my mind to say how many, and in your book, it blows my mind just how many opportunities these guys had to really put some information together and get, you know, and I think stop this thing. Do you think so? Do you think
Yeah.
Stuff? Now, another thing I want to talk about is Musharraf. We had a piece on Musharraf yesterday. Now, Musharraf, I want to talk about Musharraf's intelligence organization, because he said yesterday, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the piece in front of me, that essentially that he doesn't believe there are any Al-Qaeda sympathizers within his ISI.
Yeah, the intelligence service there.
I would laugh about that. I mean, it is so dodgy, the ISI. It's so filled with supporters of Osama bin Laden. I mean, polls are taken showing that of all the countries in the Middle East, there's more of the population in Pakistan supporting bin Laden than any other country. Something like 80-90% of the people in Pakistan have sympathy for Osama bin Laden. So how do you even find people to put in your government, to put into your intelligence agency, who aren't supportive when you have that many of just, you know, everyday folks?
Yet Musharraf is our ally in Pakistan, yet his rule of Pakistan is so fragile that, you know, he can't trust half of his cabinet, I'm sure, and certainly not his intelligence service. He says that he thinks that bin Laden is still alive, because bin Laden probably calls him weekly. Did you get the check? But the other question I have quickly, because you got to go. I'm sorry you got here late, but we got another guest waiting to come on. Is that, where is the question in my head? Is it true that Daniel Pearl was getting really close to finding some stuff out about the ISI when he was assassinated?
Yeah, we don't know exactly what he was looking into, but he was certainly poking around about the ISI, looking into their ties to the underworld, potentially ties to Al-Qaeda. And they don't mess around. They went after a number of journalists, and I think all evidence points to their involvement in his death.
The ISI.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's pretty shifty, and this is what, you know, we hinge a lot of faith on Pakistan to to, do you think they're going to deliver Bin Laden?
They might have made some kind of deal. Who knows?
All right. We got to go, Paul. Sorry you got here late. We'll have you on again if you're still in town. The book is The Terror Timeline, a day-by-day, minute-by-minute, lead-up to 9/11. Great book. What do we got, Riley?
Stay with us. We've got Recovery Corner, tax expert David K. Johnson, and a liberal agenda on Air America Radio.
This year, you are going to quit smoking. Whether you've said it for years or you're trying for the very first time, there's a revolutionary new system that's guaranteed to help you succeed or your money back. SmokeRx has a 95% success rate, so we guarantee that you'll be completely smoke-free and cravings-free in as little as 1 week. Unlike gums or patches, SmokeRx is a complete system that includes natural herbs to curb your cravings safely without nicotine. Best of all, SmokeRx starts to work immediately. Come on. Aren't you willing to give yourself 1 week to quit? We're so confident that SmokeRx will work for you that we're giving away a free month's supply with all of today's orders. Whether you're doing it for yourself or for the ones you love, SmokeRx is the fast, guaranteed answer. In as little as 1 week, you'll kick the habit for good or your money back. Call now to receive a free month's supply with your order.
To order risk-free, call 1-800-305-2704. That's 1-800-305-2704. Call 1-800-305-2704 now.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilbert. The White House received pre-war warnings in Iraq and chose to ignore the consequences for an American-led invasion to remove Saddam Hussein from power. National Intelligence Council painted a dismal picture for George W. Bush 2 months before the war started, strongly suggesting that the war would not have been in the country's best interest. President Bush tells television's Bill O'Reilly that Iraqis should go to the polls and vote, even if there are bombs dropping around them. Bush told O'Reilly that he's confident that a vote will take place for a new government in spite of the unrest. American forces bombed a suspected hideout used by associates of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi in Fallujah on Tuesday today. As part of a campaign of airstrikes, the U.S. military said has taken its heavy toll on the Jordanian-born militant's terror network. And reports from Florida this morning say the state's poorest inhabitants have been severely affected by the spate of post-hurricane discomforts. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
From New Orleans.
Touchdown! And the Saints have retaken the lead.
To Oakland.
Touchdown! Raiders!
And from Florida.
He made the grab! Touchdown, Jacksonville!
To Washington.
10-5, touchdown, Washington Redskins.
Every game, every week, everywhere. Go to Sirius.com for the full game schedule and for live 24-7 football. Tune in to Sirius NFL Radio 124.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Give me liberty or give me death. Come up and see me sometime. Don't use cannon to kill mosquito. All famous quotes. But when I come back, I'll cite the ultimate bull, Oney.
I'm Bobby Ligas with a tip about fuel injectors. The manufacturer that pioneered the best fuel injector cleaning equipment also makes the best fuel injector cleaner. That company is BG Products. Professionals use BG's 44K to eliminate injector fouling. If you expect professional results, ask for a professional product. Ask your shop for BG 44K or go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com.
Forget Patrick Henry. Remember these excuses. Quotes straight from insurance company archives. In my attempt to kill a fly, I drove into a telephone pole. The guy was all over the road. I had to swerve a number of times before I hit him. An invisible car came out of nowhere, struck my vehicle, then vanished. Coming home, I drove into the wrong house and collided with a tree I don't even have. And finally, the indirect cause of this accident was a little guy in a small car with a big mouth. Well, I'll take some cheese with that baloney, and you can quote me on that. I'm Bobby Likens. Likens, you'll love us.
Good morning, it's Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley, it's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good morning.
Broadcasting from the capital of the liberal elite, New York City. My name's Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
And in Recovery Corner, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. And as always, I'm offering my counsel to my temporary sponsee, George W. Big debate coming up there, George. The whole world's watching. What an opportunity for you. Here's what you should do. And here's the interesting part. It's also what you really want to do. Just let it out. All of it. Look straight into the camera and say, I'm George W. Bush, and I'm an alcoholic. But try not to use your last name. Just say George W. All right? Just say it. Just let it all out. I didn't take my flight physical because I was drunk. I had to do community service because of a hushed-up drug conviction. And even though I stopped drinking, my behavior has been that of an out-of-control, dry drunk. I wrecked the state of Texas. I executed people more or less because I felt like it. I plowed into Iraq with the same reckless lack of foresight that I used to drive to the donkey show in Juarez. I'm paranoid, vindictive, controlling, snide, patronizing, and I'm not sorry about any of it. And by this time, I'm so set in my ways that there's virtually no hope of change. Wow. What a great TV moment that would be. Imagine how many people would be liberated by such a speech. It would probably put you right back into the White House. You know what? Forget I said anything, right? But anyways, keep the plug in the jug. Bend your knees before you bend your elbow. It's alcoholism, not alcoholism. There's no chemical solution to a spiritual problem. If you got one foot in yesterday, the other foot in tomorrow, you're peeing on today, get to a meeting. Don't drink. It's a little help. I reach out and help. In studio right now, Paul Thompson has left, and we have another guest in. It's so nice to have a couple of guests in studio. He's the author of Perfectly Legal, the covert campaign to rig our tax system to benefit the super rich and cheat everybody else. He's a financial reporter for the New York Times. He won a Pulitzer in 2001. Good morning, David K. Johnston. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so let's get right to it. Do I need to do a W-4 if I'm incorporated?
You need to do lots of paperwork.
Okay.
And right. Under any tax system, you're going to do lots of paperwork.
Now, the president, I don't know. I really am, I read about money. I read about economics. I read about taxes, and I get kind of lost. All right. Now, if Bush gets into a second presidency, what's he trying to do tax-wise? Because, lay it out for me so I can understand it.
Well, I think the president's agenda is very clear. The president and the Republican Party believe that we should fundamentally reduce taxes on capital. They are too high, as opposed to taxes on labor. And that by reducing taxes on capital, we will get more investment, which in the long run, classic economic theory says, will lead to more jobs and a higher standard of living for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
They also believe for the highest income earners that the tax rates are too high and that they discourage them from being more productive. Therefore, we need to make permanent the current top rate, which is 35%. So if you were fortunate enough last year to make $100 million, you would have had to write a $35 million check to the government. On the other hand,
I know.
You would have kept $65 million.
I know. It really worked out for me last year.
Now, that 35% is down from, what, about 38-39% just a few years ago?
It was 39.6%. It is not a big drop. And interestingly, the claim that tax rates have a big influence on economic growth, I think, is not necessarily supported by the record. Classic economic theory says lower tax rates should, in fact, discourage, for example, cheating. But there are people who will cheat on a tax of one mil. That's a hundredth of a percentage point.
Right.
We have plenty of evidence of that. And there are people who will overpay their taxes when the tax rate is 40%. We had much more economic growth during the period from 1993, when Congress imposed the 39.6% rate, through the year 2000. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we will continue not to have economic growth and continue to have negative job growth if we maintain the current tax policy. I think those connections are less clear, particularly in a global economy.
Wow.
Now, I'm curious, why do you think David K. Johnston, is the American government and this administration pushing these kind of tax cuts and this kind of permanent tax cut during wartime? I can't remember, and I believe Senator John McCain even brought up the fact that, most presidents do not cut taxes in the middle of a war. Why is this one doing it?
Mark, it's not most, it's all of them. I mean, there is no historical precedent for this. In World War I, we instituted the estate tax and the gift tax to back it up and to back up the income tax because it was said that there should be a conscription of wealth to go along with the conscription of young men who were sent off to the slaughter lines in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is rather unprecedented. But, I think it's very clear at this point that regardless of who wins this election, your tax burden is going to rise. And the reason is that the government's revenues have not increased as a result of these tax cuts. They haven't increased, period, whether it's a result of it or not. So the government is now spending $450 billion a year that it's not bringing in through the normal tax system, and that's supplemented by about $200 million a year more from Social Security you're paying for in advance that's being used to subsidize tax cuts for those at the very top.
Our Social Security is?
Yes, yes. So one of the things in Perfectly Legal I show people is that Social Security is actually, because of its design since 1983, a subsidy program for the rich.
So they just take the money that's supposed to be sitting there waiting for us when we get old?
That's exactly right. And because the government is running up these huge deficits, and we are therefore having a bigger and bigger and bigger federal debt, that's how Social Security is going to fail. When Alan Greenspan persuaded Congress, under the control of the Democrats in 1983, to have you pay in advance for your Social Security benefits, and right now this year if you make $50,000, you're paying close to $2,000 in advance for your benefits.
That's why they take it out of your check.
That's right. He said, this is above what's needed to pay current benefits, extra $2,000.
Okay.
He said, let's use this money to pay off the federal government's debt so when the boomers retire, the government will have the capacity to borrow money if there's a shortfall. Well, we're on our way to having more than $10 trillion of federal debt in a few years. The capacity to borrow to let the boomers retire is not going to be there. And a very substantial number of single older women, whether they're widowed, divorced, or never married, depend on Social Security for the bulk of their income.
So
you are, you know, one of the issues that's hardly being discussed in this debate is that long-term impact that current federal spending policy will have. So no matter what happens, you can't go on forever spending money you don't have without consequences. One consequence could be a depression. One could be inflation. There are all sorts of things that can happen. We don't know. But something will happen, and it will be bad.
Yeah, it already feels bad. I mean, you're talking to me, and I'm like, you know, I'm trying to wrap my brain around this stuff. I read Susskind's book on Paul O'Neill, understood very little. But the one thing that struck me was Dick Cheney saying that, you know, Reagan taught us that deficits don't matter. Now, where does the vice president get off on saying that, and what does that mean?
Well, let's be fair to Mr. Cheney. I think he's talking about as a political matter, whether you can get votes. I don't think deficits matter. I don't think most Americans walk around thinking about the fact that the federal government is spending money like a drunken sailor who stole your American Express card.
But it's an economic matter. Right.
We're behaving like third world countries who we, you know, chastise and criticize for their misconduct. And both parties are involved in this. This is Washington that is doing this. I mean, you didn't see the Democrats all say, nope, we're not going to vote for spending money we can't pay for. They make noises about it, but then, by golly, they are not going to vote for anything that they think will be used against them in an election.
We got to go. We're going to come back. I'd like to know, well, who's lending us money? And we'll talk about, what do you want to talk about when we come back, Mark Riley?
Well, I want to talk about whether or not this administration has a flat tax as an end game.
All right, there you go. You stay tuned on Air America Radio. We'll get to that. Hey, check us out at morningsedition.com where you can blog, email, and waste lots of time at work looking at our links.
I train after class every afternoon. With tireless passion and perspiration, you shake your pom-poms, all in awe of Saturday's game day. That's your day, your turn to get the crowd roaring, because you're Bert Buckman. Male cheerleader.
Ready? Okay!
Cheer on your favorite college team. The top NCAA games are on Sirius. Go to Sirius.com for the full broadcast game schedule.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
My number one concern in this election is my nine-month-old son, and so I will be voting for Kerry because I believe if the Bush administration stays in office for four more years, important things for his future, like the education system, the environment, and civil liberties, will be permanently damaged.
Hi, this is Tina Hansen, and I live in Salem, Oregon. I personally believe this election is going to be very, very close. I really don't know who's happening, but if it were held today, I personally would go for President Bush.
Hi, this is Sherry from Brandon, Florida, and I just wanted to say, please, please consider voting for Kerry in this election if you want to change the way our environment goes, our health care, our economy. We have got to make a change.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius. And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burrito.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council. Hey, what's up with the sink?
Somebody left it on.
Really?
Yeah, I've been in here 3 times since this morning. Still going.
Okay, that is so not cool.
What's not cool?
Look at the faucet.
Oh, that's so weird.
Should we do something?
You guys weren't using this, were you?
No.
Don't just take a stand. Act. The most powerful way is to register and vote. It's ridiculously simple. Log on to registerandvote2004.org and take action. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ag Council.
Forty-five past the hour. Don't go check your...
David K. Johnson is our guest here on Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. We're talking about taxes. I'm understanding as much of it as I can. The two questions that I had... first of all, if we can just get out of the way, where are we getting the money? Who's lending us money? If you gave us this third world model, where are we getting the money?
Well, a great deal of the money flowing into the U.S. is from other countries. Japan, for example, where interest rates are even lower than they are here. In fact, there have actually been occasions when people had to pay the banks to hold their money in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So if the dollar is not seen as being the most reliable currency in the world, you'll see that money instead flowing into euros and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, and before we get to the flat tax question that Riley had, what about the moral component of paying taxes? Like, my question to you is what happens to the infrastructure? Clearly here in New York, there's a lot of maintenance that needs to go on. There are government agencies. There's, you know, a lot of stuff that needs to be maintained. It's our civic duty to pay taxes. What's the end game with these conservatives? Do they just don't care?
Well, I would contend that a lot of the people who the news media calls conservatives are not. Yeah. They're radicals.
Okay.
The idea that began Western civilization was taxing people based on ability to pay. When Athens had a flat tax, it was a tyranny. When the Athenians invented the idea of taxing based on ability to pay, on the moral principle that those who were the greatest beneficiaries of a society should bear the greatest burden of maintaining it, they created democracy at the same time. Adam Smith, the father of capitalism, said taxes should be based on ability to pay, and he thought the super rich should be heavily taxed, or if they were using toll roads, should pay very high prices for them. Every classic conservative worldly philosopher has said taxes should be based on ability to pay. And it is, I would argue, the single most profoundly conservative idea in Western civilization. So if you want to shift the burden of taxes off of those at the top and on to people who have less, which we are doing in this country and have been doing now since 1983 in a whole series of laws passed by Republicans and Democrats, and will do so more in the future under current policy, you are going against the grain of 2,500 years of history. And I don't think that's conservative.
It's almost like slavery in some weird way between the debt and the taxation of the people that have the least. I mean, it almost feels like feudal.
Well, it's a lot easier to squeeze wage earners because, after all, the government, you know, knows what you got paid, Mark. Air America has to tell them. But if you're a business owner, you control what the government knows. And if we cut back tax law enforcement, we handcuff the tax police, and we don't audit like we used to. We hardly ever. 1 in 400 partnerships, which are mostly invested in by very wealthy people, 1 in 400 gets audited. But if you're the working poor, better than 1 in 50 gets audited.
Wow. David K. Johnson, talk about the flat tax and whether or not this is, in fact, what the Bush administration has as an endgame, maybe a combination flat tax and a value-added tax, a VAT.
Well, Mark, the flat tax, most people think, means everybody pays the same rate, whether it's 17% or 10% or 20%, whatever it is, we'd all pay the same rate. That's not what it is.
Hmm.
The flat tax grows out of an idea in European socialism, the value-added tax, in which at each step of manufacturing a good or producing a service, the creator adds the tax and passes it on to the next. So the guy who mines iron out of the ground and turns into taconite pellets passes the tax forward to the steel mill, which passes it to the car maker, which passes it to you when you buy the car in the dealership, and that's how it gets paid. Under the Steve Forbes flat tax plan, wages would be taxed, but Steve Forbes would never pay taxes again for the rest of his life.
And why not?
Yeah, isn't that astonishing?
And
he doesn't tell you that part of it. Because the way the plan works is you're taxed effectively on your consumption, how much money you spend on your lifestyle. So let's assume Mr. Forbes is an enormously profligate guy and spends $10 million a year in his lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And he owns a billion-dollar interest in Forbes magazine. By the way, people who own stocks and bonds, this won't help you. You have to be the direct owner of a business. So here's the tax return he files to government. Consumption spending, $10 million. Deduct value of business, $1 billion. Net position to the government on taxes, minus $990 million, no tax owed. And here's the really great part. Then he gets to adjust the value of his assets for inflation. So let's say inflation is 2%. Now he's up to $8 million, I guess. That means he has even more to deduct. He will never pay tax. Steve Forbes would never pay taxes again if the flat tax were adopted, but that's the part people don't mention.
Right. Now, what impact would this have on state and local taxes, which we in New York pay a good deal of?
Oh, we pay enormous taxes in New York State, but people do all over the country. What you are seeing is the shifting of tax burdens off Washington to local and state governments. Property taxes have gone up. Tuition, which is really a form of tax at public universities, has gone up. I mean, I was a young man. I'm 55 years old. Education was basically free, at least in California where I lived. If I were to be 18 again, the son of a 100% disabled veteran and therefore poor, I could not afford to go to college in today's circumstances, even at the little junior colleges that I went to. The money just wasn't there.
Even if you were a resident for a certain amount of years?
No, because now there are all these fees and things, and I didn't have $5 to put together.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And there are lots of poor kids.
Here in New York was free until 1976.
That's correct. And so rather than reducing burdens to human capital, which is the most valuable asset we have, we are instead raising burdens to human capital so that people who have capital assets today can live a better life.
And that shows that this administration is, more sympathetic to corporations and to the wealthy than they are to just, average working
well,
people.
Well, I mean, they really do believe, Mark, that by pursuing the policy they're pursuing, that it will lead to higher, better economic circumstances for everybody. The evidence so far hasn't supported them. For 2 years in a row, for the first time since we have records at the beginning of World War II, incomes in America fell across the board when you adjust for inflation. And without adjusting for inflation, people in, say, the $75,000 to $100,000 group, their income over 2 years went up 0.1%.
We got to go. Thank you for that information. David K. Johnson,
yes.
The author of Perfectly Legal, The Covert Campaign to Rig Our Tax System to Benefit the Super Rich and Cheat Everybody Else. I learned a lot today.
Investigate a book of the year.
Okay, there
one
you
award.
Go. I understand it.
Yes, it's all done through the lives of ordinary people so that ordinary people can understand. It's like taking the mass out of Latin and putting it in the vernacular.
All right, I'm going to do it. Thanks a lot for being with us. We'll be back with the Liberal Agenda after this on Air America Radio.
Stop whining. That's what head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Tom Donahue, told workers who just lost their high-tech jobs to overseas outsourcing. Stop whining. Analysts say this is just the beginning. Millions of more jobs could be lost in the next few years. But it's good for the U.S. economy, according to Donahue. Good for the U.S. economy? Are they kidding? These high-tech jobs were supposed to be the jobs of the future. Jobs with good pay and good benefits. Now, millions are at risk. That's why we, the Communications Workers of America, are doing something about it. We're fighting to end tax breaks that encourage companies to ship our jobs overseas. We're helping tech workers organize so they have strength at the bargaining table when it comes to salary, health care and pension benefits, and working conditions. Learn more at techsunite.org because America's future is on the line.
A message from the Communications Workers of America, the Union for the Information Age, and proud supporter of Air America.
Yeah, I remember it all right. Back in the mid-50s, a young guitar player was working at an Arkansas roadhouse when two guys start fighting and knock over a kerosene stove, setting the place on fire. Everybody rushes out to safety. The young man realizes his axe is still inside the burned building. Risking his life, he races back to get the guitar that will become known as Lucille, named after the woman those two men were fighting over.
Register to win an autographed B.B. King Lucille on the Sirius Blues page at Sirius.com from Sirius Blues 29.
Speak out on Sirius.
Get serious about your vote.
It's really important that everyone gets out and votes on Election Day, otherwise we're going to wind up with this clown in office again.
Hi, I'm Mina Sprague from St. Paul, Nebraska, and I'm voting for John Kerry because the environment is important to me and I want our babies brought back. Thank you.
Hi, this is Ron from New Jersey. This November 2nd, I'll be voting for John Kerry. Someone who stands up for the common person. Someone that's going to make our schools better. Someone that understands the complexity of the world we live in today.
Hi, this is Melissa from the ATL. I just want to encourage everyone out there to go out there and vote.
Hi, this is Marty from California, and I'm voting for John Kerry because, quite frankly, Bush scares me. But please, America, please go out and vote.
Tell us why this presidential election is important to you.
Call 1-877-33-SIRIUS and press 4.
To speak out on Sirius.
In the 2000 election, only 51% of Americans eligible to vote actually cast a ballot. 24% of Americans weren't even registered to vote at all. And until recently, I was one of them. Then a friend told me about JustVote.org, a nonprofit organization with a fast and easy way to register online. Go to JustVote.org, enter your zip code, and follow the simple instructions. You can also find your local polling place, tell a friend about JustVote.org, and donate money to help get more people registered. It's our democracy. Let's make it work. JustVote.org.
Okay, let's try and put this thing down in a nice way. That guy was intense, man. You know,
yeah.
I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America. I mean, I'm just bad. You know, I got an accountant, you know, who I trust. And, you know, I go over this stuff with him. But it's like it always frustrates me because I know I'm a bright guy. I know I'm a smart person. But when it comes to disciplining myself to learn systems, it's always been very difficult. Geometry I could handle. Taxes I can't handle.
I couldn't handle geometry or taxes.
I just can't. I mean, everything he was talking about, I mean, I understand, you know, roughly what he's talking about. But when these guys get excited about the nuances of inflation and, you know, and comparing your tax, I wish I understood exactly. It would behoove me to understand it, but I don't know why I don't. I mean, it should be very important to me. I pay what I have to pay, and that's that.
Well, here's a simple thing.
I try to get away with.
Yeah, I know. You try to get away with. What the Bush people seem to want to do is really simplify the tax code and make it so that people who have investments are the ones that make out like bandits, as opposed to us working stiffs who have to come into a job every day.
Yeah,
seems to be what their agenda is all about.
I got to get me some of them their investments.
Yeah.
I got to get me some of them.
What do we need to invest in more?
I wish I knew. You know, I don't have bad luck, but I don't have good luck either.
I don't have any luck at all because I've never invested in anything.
No?
No.
I mean, I have a, well, we don't need to get in this position.
That's because I've always been cash poor.
I know. It's like I stashed some stuff. I got into a pension. Larson just got an email from a fan.
Uh-oh.
We're talking about Larson's compulsive eating of green peppers. His compulsive eating green peppers because now he's on the Weight Watchers program, which is good. Good for you. Good luck with that. I'm sorry to bring in cookies. And when I bring in cookies, I'll hide them next time. But the email says, I can stand all the green peppers you can eat. Love me. From his wife.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
It is.
Jennifer will put up with your smellies. Hey, there's the liberal agenda from the how to end with the fact. Here from the liberal here that Barbra Streisand compound blah blah blah. One, tell everyone you meet today. Wasn't Kerry great in the debate? A total knockout. Don't mention that the debate is 2 days from now. Two, strategy meetings. Since Conan O'Brien takes over for Leno in 2009, can he help us elect Obama in 2012? I'll ask him next time I'm on his show. Three, write column for Le Monde called Le Snot Americans. I got to work on my French. Okay, four, don't just talk about moving to Amsterdam if Bush gets reelected. Get the necessary forms and start doing some web research today. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, of course Bush is ahead in the polls. It's all going exactly how he planned it, end quote.
Yes, sir.
What do we got tomorrow morning?
Coming up on tomorrow's morning's edition, Greg Palast joins us to talk about his new documentary, The 2000 Election and the 2004 Elections. Greg Palast, an incredible guy.
Yeah, I like him. He's good.
He's with us tomorrow on morning's edition here on Air America Radio. See you, Marin.
Bye, Riley.